Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Wow, there's so much to go into this evening that I feel positively schizophrenic. I'm all over the board. You want to start with the ugly politics and get it out of the way? We certainly can. For those of you who watch the Sunday Blabfest shows, you know that the latest in the withering, excoriating attacks between Senators Clinton and Obama is the business about whether or not she was racially insensitive when she said it took Lyndon Johnson signing the 1964 Civil Rights Act into law to bring civil rights into, you know, to make it a reality, to partially fulfill the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King. The Obama campaign then fired back that she was a racist pig. Nah, they didn't say that, but, you know. So it's back and forth, and the ugliness. I mean, I don't know about you, but I am fast approaching that critical political mass of turned off voter. Not that Obama or Clinton ever turned me on in the first place. But you know what I mean. Meanwhile, one is tempted to try to get a call out to the Edwards campaign to see how they feel about being Kucinich'd. That is, ignored no matter how good or how viable one's ideas are. You know what I mean. But then again, Edwards hasn't been fully Kucinich'd because only Kucinich can be completely Kucinich'd. And a new low has been reached. There will be a Las Vegas debate tomorrow, Tuesday. Oddsmakers say it's 3-1 for Obama and 4-1 for... No, I'm kidding. But here's how it works out. The debate was going to be carried, is going to be carried, shall be carried, on MSNBC. You know, home of folks like Keith Olbermann. Or home of Keith Olbermann, the only shining light of that otherwise the dismal enterprise. And MSNBC said that its standards for debate participation were the top four Democratic candidates. And that worked out fine, and then Bill Richardson dropped out, so they were compelled to send an invite to Dennis Kucinich, because that makes him, you know, and then there were four. So they invited Dennis Kucinich to the debate, and Dennis Kucinich accepted. Then, after the initial invitation had been extended, Dennis Kucinich was uninvited, because NBC had changed the criteria for debate participation to include only the top three candidates. Now, that's that's just a little too obvious even for my taste. I mean, this doesn't even require the aluminum foil helmet. This doesn't require that you believe that there are black helicopters hovering outside your window. This is obvious. I mean, this is obvious message manipulation and information control on the part of the mainstream media. As much as I respect Keith Olbermann, I guess it's entirely too much for him to come out and suggest that these kind of tactics are just on the, you know, on the showing in front of the curve side of purely sleazy. Because, frankly, a debate that includes John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich serves as a vital counter to the corporatism that is constantly preached by Barack Obama and, to a greater extent, Hillary Clinton. Those two, we already know, will be sniping at each other all night long. Somebody out there has got to talk about ideas, has got to talk about real issues and real solutions. Because you doing the fuzzy bunny thing and saying, you know, change is good, yay, change, woo. And, you know, being followed, I can change too, is not going to cut it. People who have no intention of change, of changing America, talking about change, you know, call me crazy, it rings a little hollow with me. But I said that I'm on the verge of, if I haven't already become, a turned-off voter. Why, you might ask? Well, it has a little bit to do with things like this. You know the race card got thrown out over the weekend with the Obama campaign accusing the Clinton campaign of being racially insensitive by, you know, the bit with Lyndon Johnson signing the Civil Rights Act. And so then the Clinton campaign fires back. But it doesn't just fire back one barrel, it fires both. The surrogate doing the job, well, you remember when the Clinton campaign got rid of, what's his name, Shaheen in New Hampshire for the slur against Obama over alleged drug use? Yeah. And oh, well, we would never say that he, and we wouldn't talk about that. No, we wouldn't do that. That wouldn't be nice. Let's all sing Kumbaya. No, sorry. Doesn't quite work that way. While Senator Clinton will maintain the high ground, she has surrogates out there doing the really sleazy, dirty work. And in this case, in front of a pretty, you know, decent-sized audience, to, you know, essentially refuting the idea that there was anything racially insensitive in the comments about Lyndon Johnson signing it, which I don't think was racially insensitive. But then again, I'm a white guy. What do I know? So it's a tough call on my part. No, the Clinton campaign has a surrogate out on the hustings, hustling along, trying to defuse this otherwise pretty sleazy situation. And that surrogate, well, that surrogate's Robert Johnson. No, sadly, it's not that Robert Johnson. I've got the wrong Robert Johnson queued up, I guess. No, not Robert Johnson, the man who basically invented rock and roll, blues, and several different other genres of music. Wrong Robert Johnson. No, the Robert Johnson that the Clinton campaign has out doing its dirty work for him is Robert Johnson, the head of BET. And he spoke to a group yesterday, namely Sunday, he was campaigning in South Carolina and was trying to address this issue. But like I said, he didn't just shoot one barrel, he shot two, and the second one is really, really dirty. Have a listen.
as an African American, I am, frankly, insulted that the Obama campaign would imply that we are so stupid that we would think Hillary and Bill Clinton, who have been deeply and emotionally involved in black issues, when Barack Obama...
Now, wait. Who said that the Obama campaign said anybody was stupid? I tell you what, somebody better nip this nastiness in the bud pretty damn quick, or we can kiss our hopes of getting the a Democrat in the White House goodbye. Because if I was one of the Republican candidates for president, I'd be sitting back chuckling, especially if you're Huckabee or McCain. Well, if you're Huckabee or McCain, because the rest are going to just fall by the wayside. I would be giggling. All you got to do is be quiet, and we will tear ourselves to pieces.
That we would think Hillary and Bill Clinton, who have been deeply and emotionally involved in black issues, when Barack Obama was doing something in the neighborhood that I won't say what he was doing, but he said it in his book.
Yeah, see, Barack Obama, he was off, he was skiing the slopes of Peru, if you know what I mean. He was using that Bolivian marching powder because he done said it in his book. Is this where we have to go now? We've had 8 years of a bona fide, no question about it, proven drunk drug abuser in the White House. And Senator Clinton's got somebody out. Hear it again. Let's do it again. They've got somebody doing their dirty work who's going to smear Barack Obama over a drug issue.
When Barack Obama was doing something in the neighborhood that I won't say what he was doing, but he said it in his book.
Take that long, Mr. Johnson. Because you know what you've just done. You have just lowered the political discourse in this country a little further into the sleaze. But that's okay. He wasn't done. He wasn't done by any stretch of the imagination.
When they have been involved, to say that these two people would denigrate the accomplishments of civil rights marchers, men and women who were hosed, beaten, and bled, and some died, to expect us now all of a sudden to say we are attacking a black man?
See, part of that makes almost a little bit of sense. Because I don't think you could make the race... you can't. You can't make the race card stick to Hillary Clinton, and God knows you can't make the race card stick to Bill Clinton. Now, you can make the corporate card stick to her, and you can, by extension, make the argument that, you know, because she's so sucked up to corporate America, she can't hear the cries of the normal people, be they black or white. You can make that stick to her all day long. But you can't make an allegation of racial bias stick to Bill or Hillary Clinton. That's just stupid. And it would have been just fine if Robert Johnson would have come out and said that. And just said that. But in the middle of it, he had to come out with a veiled, slippery, slimy, sleazy reference to drugs. Oh, this campaign is going places I don't want to go with it. And my suggestion to cure all of this is to reject them both. And to reject them both either in the form of a vote for John Edwards or a vote for Dennis Kucinich. End this stupidity. End this hatefulness. End this petty, low-rent bickering. And for once and for all, send a message to our candidates. I don't care if they're senators, former senators, governors, Congress critters, or aldermen. Send a message that while this stuff may work and play in the Republican Party, we Democrats want no damn part of it.
I mean, that kind of campaign behavior does not resonate with me for a guy who says...
That kind of campaign behavior. What kind, Mr. Johnson? The kind where you allege that somebody was a vile drug junkie by veiled reference? That kind of campaign behavior, Mr. Johnson? I suggest that you follow the admonition of that other Mr. Johnson whose music we played a moment ago, and go down to the crossroads, Mr. Johnson, and get down on your knees. Because you, sir, are behaving in a fashion no better than any soulless, motherless, godless repig-licking out there. But that's okay. He's got one more piece of sleaze to play in his little bag of tricks.
Does not resonate with me for a guy who says, I want to be a reasonable, likable Sidney Poitier, guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah, now Barack Obama is Sidney Poitier. Of course, it wouldn't bother me in the least to have someone with the class of a Sidney Poitier. But what does that do? What does that do for that certain generation that is familiar with that film? You know, we use film references here all the time. Grew up watching movies. It's movies. It's kind of hard not to do. What does that film reference do for the people who hear it? Especially in South Carolina. Come on. I know you know. A great film. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? A great bridge of the racial divide with an absolute all-star cast. Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, and, of course, Sidney Poitier, who plays a very well-educated, upscale black man who decides and who falls in love with and decides to marry the white daughter of a liberal couple. Mm-hmm. So, by referring to Barack Obama as Sidney Poitier and making the direct reference to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Robert Johnson has played the sleaziest of all race cards. The white man, the black man gonna get your white women card. And I, for one, am sick of it! It was sickening when it was the Harold Ford, when it was the Bob Corker campaign playing jungle drums with the busty, pretty, blonde, white girl saying, "Harold, call me." It was sickening then. And I've said on this program on repeated occasions that I fully expected that card to be played early and often by the Repig-Lickin Party. But no, damn it, no, the Clinton campaign has beaten them to it.
I mean, that kind of campaign behavior does not resonate with me for a guy who says, I want to be a reasonable, likable Sidney Poitier, guess who's coming to dinner?
Guess who's coming to get your white women? It would be different had he said that in Massachusetts. It would be different had he said it in California or Washington or Oregon or any other enlightened state. But no. He said it in South Carolina. On the front end, he slimes Barack Obama as another drug-experimenting black man, and then follows up by warning white South Carolina by reference to a film that is after the white women. Am I making too much of this? You tell me. You tell me. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you've got your own long distance unlimited dialing plan, 304-658-5453. Now that we've heard the nasty Robert Johnson, let's hear the classic Robert Johnson. This is the horn.
I went to the crossroads, fell down on my knees. I went to the crossroads, fell down on my knees. Had a lot of fun.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah!
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
All right, so we move now to the other side of the coin, if you will, because there's no end to this stuff. I know that it's prone to being talked about. Well, let's see, what do we got going on here? Let's check the phones. We'll get to the flip side of the coin, believe me. This is too icky to pass up. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
I'm with you, Bob. I'm so disgusted with all this.
Well,
I'm so disgusted.
Are we not better than the other side?
And what is the sort of all this junk? I think it is just horrific. What is the point?
For one, Juanita, it is a manifestation of the purest, most naked form of unmitigated greed.
Greed?
Yeah, greed. Absolute greed for power.
Yeah, but it's a stupid way.
And what you've got here is two people in the form of Senators Obama and Clinton, who apparently would run over their own grandmothers in the middle of the road to get to the presidency. I understand that there's got to be a hell of a lot of drive to run for that office. That's certainly not a level of drive that I have. I got to get my 8 hours of sleep a night, or I'm not worth a damn.
Well,
you know, these people go and go and go, and it's
absolutely ridiculous. You thought the Republicans were ridiculous, but now we're becoming, I don't know, even more so ridiculous.
Well, I reiterate what I have said in the past, Juanita, and that is, when we get to November, I will vote for whomever the Democratic nominee is.
Yeah.
If it's Hillary Clinton, I will vote for Hillary Clinton. If it's Barack Obama, I will vote for Barack Obama. Because both of those people, and I think this is the floor of what bothers me the most, both of those people are infinitely better than any of the POSs running for the Republican nomination.
Yeah.
That much is absolutely abundantly clear. And when they engage in these kinds of politic, and it shows me, however, a darker side of them, that really, really, really puts me off.
Me too. I totally agree with you. And I heard them, they're talking about, Edward's talking about his son dying, says he's going around telling everybody, I want to tell you about my son dying, you know.
Well, but that's, to me, I'll make an excuse for that, Juanita. That is a legitimate narrative within his life, especially within...
But them talking about it, they're talking about it like it's something. I mean, I know I've been bereaved about different things, and talking helps.
Yes, it does, and but there's greater meaning, too, because John Edwards' son was, for all intents and purposes, killed by corporate negligence. So he has a vested interest in talking about balancing the scales between corporate America and working America.
But, you know, they talked about him in the most... They've attacked him on the other side for the most ridiculous things about his hair and about, you know, about the child. My God, I mean, what kind of a country have we got? I don't know. I don't know.
I don't either. I wish somebody would give a wake up call to both the Obama and the Clinton camps and tell them, you know, just stop it. Just stop it. Stop it if you care about the party. Stop it if you care about America. Stop it.
Absolutely. I mean, I just totally agree with you. And I heard that Dr. Bill, is that his name?
Yeah, Dr. Bill. Yeah.
I guess it's a rerun, and he was talking so interesting about how everything's going to be blamed on us if we do get in there, and we'll say, yeah, you're right.
Well, sure. I mean, and, you know, that's one of the big selling points for Senator Clinton, Juanita, is that, you know, well, she knows how to fight the right-wingers. She knows how to respond.
Well,
and I think that's
she?
But I think that's part of what's going on here is that, you know, she's not going to brook any BS from anybody, and she's going to fight back. I mean, she had this tete-a-tete thing with Tim Russert yesterday on Meet the Press that was enough to, gag a buzzard.
I can't hardly watch those shows because those people, including Stephanopoulos, they're not any better than those people on Fox. In many ways, they're not.
Not by a long shot.
No,
So...
When we had when Jeb ran for his second term, and the Democratic Party they didn't want the chance, so Janet Reno let her run and let the people decide, so they got McBride, and McBride wasn't very experienced. Well, he and Jeb had three debates, and one of them was on a radio station that nobody could get. And the other one was in some kind of secluded location. And the other one was on a local news shows. And Tim Russert was the one that asked the questions. And he would look at McBride like he could kill him. How dare you run against this fine man? I mean, he would give him those evil eyes. But McBride did pretty good for everything he was put under. But that was the three debates. I'm not kidding you. Nobody could find that radio station they were on. And
not surprising though. I mean that's the other thing that's becoming clearer and clearer is the level of media manipulation here. You've got Dennis Kucinich being shut out of debates by the Disney Network, ABC.
Yeah.
And then along comes MSNBC, you know, whose parent is NBC, who is owned by General Electric, the nation's single largest defense contractor. And they say they'll let him in, and then they shut the door in his face. It's becoming incredibly obvious. Of course, yeah. I can't help but also remember, Juanita, back in one of the early debates when there was that little whispered exchange between John Edwards and Hillary Clinton, in which they agreed that the field needed to be narrowed.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
And of course, we know what that meant. That meant.
Well, I got it narrowed now.
Yeah.
I hope
yeah.
I'm happy.
And of course, the reason for keeping Dennis Kucinich out of these debates is a very substantial one, and that is that where the Iraq War was concerned, Dennis was right about it from the beginning, and he has remained rock solid and constant, as constant as the stars in the sky ever since. He started the debate about NAFTA and WTO. He started the debate about the outsourcing of jobs. All of these issues are issues that were started by Dennis Kucinich and then co-opted by other Democratic candidates. And you can't have a guy in there looking at those three saying, well, you know, I'm gratified by the fact that you're finally talking about these things, but you still don't have it right. I'm the guy who's got the answers. Can't have that.
Well, we've got a long road to hoe, haven't we? And what's so bad is, like, now our primary is coming up on, I think, on the 29th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have it, I think, in September. No, they had to change it.
And created a real kerfuffle inside the Democratic Party doing it, Michigan and Florida both.
Oh, yes.
Because neither Florida's nor, if I understand it correctly, neither Florida's nor Michigan's delegates will be seated at the Democratic National Convention because of what they've done.
Too. Yeah, they had a big deal about it down here. I mean, I never did really get it straight, but the people that did go into all those meetings, you know, they pretty much, you know, were siding with the dean. Because this is ridiculous to have this decided this early.
Well, it's not going to be. I mean, all this campaign's been going on for a year now. And I'm absolutely, I feel like something out of Ghostbusters. I feel like I've been slimed.
Yeah, I saw that movie. I remember that.
I mean, this is just making me feel dirty.
That was a very what is it, apocryphal film?
Yeah, in many ways. In many ways, you know. Well, I mean,
yeah,
you know, if Mrs. Clinton's flack Robert Johnson can reference Guess Who's Coming to Dinner,
who
I guess
is Robert Johnson.
He is the head of BET, Black Entertainment Television.
I remember. But isn't he a Republican?
No, apparently he is a Democratic Clinton acolyte.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there you have it. But
those are the kind of Democrats that we don't need, and they're not real Democrats.
Well, it's a little disturbing to see somebody come out and, but there's nothing new in having surrogates do your dirty work for you in American politics. But if this is the campaign about change, well, this would be a lovely start, of that change.
Yes, right. Well, I don't know who's advising them.
And of course, like two children squabbling on a playground, if you bring the two camps together, it'll be nothing but, well, he started it. No, she started it. She started it. No, he started it. It's like a couple of 5-year-olds. It really, really is. They need to be sent to the corner until an adult shows up.
Absolutely. That's right.
And like I said, all the while, those good-for-nothing, lowering a snake's belly in a wagon rut or pig lickings are just sitting there giggling.
Oh, yeah. And I noticed, I watch since the little Nazi came back, I've been watching The View.
Mm-hmm.
She was really quiet today. Kind of like she'd been told, you know, just...
Oh, Elizabeth Hasselbeck?
Yeah, call her the little Nazi.
The little Nazi. I love that. I hadn't heard that before. That's beautiful, Juanita.
Oh, she does all those talking points, you know. And today she didn't talk that much. And she's usually, she can't keep her shut up.
Well, thank heaven for small blessings.
But I think they're just sitting back and let us destroy ourselves.
Well, we're among other things, Juanita, we're doing their work for them.
Yeah, right.
Because don't think for an instant that close notes aren't being kept on every last one of these issues, and every last one of these is going to show up in a Republican campaign ad once the battle is joined.
And history will repeat and repeat and repeat.
Sadly.
It will never die down.
Well, it'll... I don't know. I expect that the minute this election is over, the next one will begin. That's where we've gotten to in this country.
Yeah.
It's pretty sickening. Juanita, thank you very much, dear.
Okay.
You have yourself a great evening.
I wish nothing would turn for the better for us someday.
So do I.
Are we going to have to get our little sticks and axes?
Well, we're going to have to. The only way they will change it is if we teach them to. And we are so polarized and so partisanized that we don't have the will to do that.
Right.
Because people have invested their sense of self-worth in Barack Obama, and they've invested their sense of self-worth in Hillary Clinton, and they can't see past it in order to look at both camps and say, shut up.
Right. Absolutely.
And so if nobody else will do it, by God, I will.
Well, keep on, brother.
I'm going to try. Juanita, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Hi, who have I got?
Gary from Maryland.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm okay. How about you?
All right. I wasn't going to give you a call, but as you know, we had the conversation last week, and it was kind of addressing this issue because I told you I saw this coming.
You did. You absolutely did. And this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
This is just the little tip of the iceberg sticking out of the water. There's a whole lot more underneath.
Yeah. I kind of disagree with something that you said earlier, but, you know, we are in America, so we can kind of disagree.
We can. Well, I mean, straighten me up. I mean, that's what I'm here for.
Well, I told you I had been following the campaign pretty closely, and after the Iowa, after Barack Obama won Iowa, you know, I live here in Maryland and D.C. area, so I know some people in the D.O.C. and stuff like that, that there was going to be an orchestrated campaign to go after him. Which would be obviously the thing. You have a guy, an insurgent, or whatever you want to call him, to come up and take over the front runner, so to speak. So we knew that was coming. But I also got a sense from looking at everything that it was going to pretty much be relentless, and that everything was on the table. And that's why when I called you last week, I kind of alluded to it, but I just kind of like let it see how far it would go. And the fact of the matter that proof in the pudding is yesterday. Really shows you the Clinton are actually the ones who are actually orchestrating this, is the fact that they brought out Robert Johnson yesterday and allowed him to stand up there and say those talking points. Those are the talking points that he said. Those weren't just
Sure they were.
Yeah, and she was sitting there. You would say to yourself at that point, you should be at a high sensitivity level since Thursday this thing was starting to brew off after comments that Bill and Hillary kind of was taken out of context but was twisted. To tell everybody in that camp to shut it down. That didn't happen. They're on a full-scale attack against Obama, and that's just a fact. And I think you have to be very careful because, and I'm not saying that there's probably a small fraction of Obama people out kind of playing this to their advantage, because yes, if they're probably going to get some votes, they're probably going to do it. But I think we got to be very careful not to say, okay, Obama's actually orchestrating that, because I don't feel like I've seen enough evidence. First of all, I haven't seen any tape of him making any comments derogatory or even taken out of context toward women. That's number one. Number two is I've seen enough evidence from the Clinton on tape. I see Bill Clinton on radio doing radio shows or whatever, just ginning up. And I think what their mastermind is thinking is, look, when she cried, and I believe that the cries were real, is that she got a lot of media attention. She got headlines. She was back on a front page. Obama was gaining all his media attention. And as they say, any publicity is good publicity. Now we have another orchestrated thing where they say, hey, let's make race also the issue, because it'll put Bill Clinton, this icon, American icon, back in the news, and we'll put Hillary. Now I know some people say, well, that's crazy because it comes from a negative point of view. But I don't think so. I think this is actually a calculated point by the Clintons, because they don't seem to be able to say, hey, let's just shut it down. Why haven't Howard Dean or anybody in the DLC to shut this down? Why are they allowing this to keep going? And this is why I said last week that I didn't feel that hitting, and you know I'm a John Edwards supporter. I'm a black man, but I've always supported John Edwards because he's the best candidate, period. The reason why I don't like Bill Clinton at this point, because I said last time, there's a time when he had a leadership and he was a good leader at the time. Their time has passed. They're going to divide the country. They are dividing just a primary race. Imagine what they, when they get to the Republican Party. The better ticket would be Edwards and Obama. That should be the Democratic ticket. We need to move away from the Clintons. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, you can blame them for the people who attack them all the time. But the fact of the matter is, they play very divisive politics. Maybe it's a defense mechanism from all the attacks they took. But I think right now they just feel like they're entitled to the presidency, and they'll do anything, anything to get it. And I don't think that's what we need. We've had enough of that with George Bush. You know, it's just I'm really upset about it, you know, the whole thing. I'm you probably hear it in my voice.
I hope you can tell that I'm pretty disgusted with it. I'm pretty disgusted with it, too, Gary.
I'm sorry?
I'm pretty disgusted with it, too.
Oh, I know. I heard you before I called. That's why I called. I said, well, Bob, I think I'm feeling how Bob's feeling right now. I better call and try to get back on his channel.
I mean, I don't have any misgivings about me or you or anybody listening to this program or the vast majority of people who are inclined to vote Democratic. We're better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, Robert Johnson referenced, you know, and he was speaking to a black audience, and he said, does the Obama campaign think we're so stupid that? Well, you know what? It's not something that should just be addressed to the African Americans in America. Does Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, you know, because even if he's not initiating it, the more you stir it, the more it stinks. You know what I mean? And as a consequence of that, do they both think that we're so stupid that we can't make our judgments about their value as candidates based upon their positions? Instead of references to drug use or whether or not Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have done enough for black America or any of that foolishness. Those aren't issues.
But, Bob, can I ask you a question? See, this is why I'm taking a little bit of issue with you. Has Obama said anything about Monica Lewinsky at this point that we know of?
No, he hasn't.
Has he said anything about Bill Clinton lying on the oath or whatever you want to call it, or talking about...
Not a blessed word.
Exhale or not exhaling with his supposed situation. See, that's my point.
Here's just an example, Gary. Here's just an example. He made a statement at some point. This was during the Iowa debate because I remember talking about the story because it was a sort of a precursor to this business. He made a statement. Well, I haven't been running for president for the last 30 years. Okay, and that was a direct. Jab at Hillary.
Okay,
so he says that, and then in what I consider to be among the most petty acts of any political season with which I am familiar, the Clinton campaign came back and offered up a kindergarten essay by young Barry Obama saying that he wanted to be president.
Okay.
So, you know, it is punch and counterpunch. I mean,
nobody's going to sit, he's not going to sit there and just take this.
And the Obama camp did say that with the Lyndon Johnson remarks that that Senator Clinton had marginalized the efforts of Dr. King and all the people who were hurt and bled and wounded and died in the civil rights struggle. Those things were put out there by the Obama campaign. So as a consequence, you get this response by Robert Johnson with the veiled reference to Senator Obama's having said that yes, he did smoke pot and fooled with cocaine. Yeah. So what? You know.
But see, what I'm questioning is what I'm asking you, Bob, is that as I said, I've worked with this deal. So you always have small fringe groups of volunteers who work who will print their own flyers. They sometimes go off. Target, because you'll have like a, you know, they'll send you the memos, the talking points, what you're supposed to do, and then people will obviously go off on their own. My thing is, I want to focus on the candidates and what they are saying, and what I'm telling you, what I'm seeing, what I've seen repeated video, and I've looked for video also of Obama, and you know, his wife Michelle made a comment yesterday that probably wasn't appropriate, is that what I've seen is that particularly Bill Clinton continually is at his forums attacking him in person, and it's not even nice. is very vicious. Even with the fairy tale thing, you know, I didn't too much. I thought the thing was out of context of what he was saying. You know, I understood what he was saying, even though I think it was kind of like a petty point. I think the problem was that I think the way Bill came off, he just came off like he was very pissed off. And I think that's what's really upsetting about it, because there's just more, it seems to be more of the Clintons out there doing this than the Obama. Now, the Obama camp at the bottom are probably, obviously, are trying to take some advantage of this and spinning it whatever. But I'm talking about the lead people who are visible, Obama, his wife, his campaign manager. Those people are the people who I'm really looking to see what are they actually saying, because I don't know if we can necessarily control what some people.
I understand. I do understand the point that you're making, Gary.
Yeah, I understand.
But
I'm just saying.
I think that Bill Clinton is coming across as very angry. The other part of this, though, is the going all the way back to his 1992 presidential campaign. There is a tenet within Clinton campaign strategies that says you do not allow anything to get traction, you do not allow anything to get go unresponded to, that you always punch back and you try to punch harder than the blow that was landed on you.
Exactly. Yep.
And that's why he was able to beat Poppy Bush, in large part, because every time Poppy Bush tried to make something stick, you know, Bill didn't just punch back. He punched back and then landed, you know, through the right and then through the left.
But let me ask you, though, you know, when I'm watching all of this, how much of this is actually not so much the Obama camp bottom, really? I think how much is it just the media and the right wing?
Oh, the media is a huge part of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I'm just a little concerned that we may possibly. I'm not saying Obama's the right guy. I'm not saying this. But I'm saying let's be careful that we're not playing into the hands of. Because I've listened to Russ and I've listened to Sean Hannity. They're playing this thing up big time. They're just all over the radio with this.
Oh, I know. I have real misgivings sometimes talking about this stuff. But apparently, I mean, you know, going by my email and the stuff that I get and the calls that I get, this is stuff that concerns Democratic voters, too. And, you know, I want the end-of-the-day thesis that I'm offering up to be that we tell both of these camps that we can do better, that we want to hear them talk about the issues in depth, that we don't give a damn about this kind of petty sniping.
I think if I was a father of a kid or anything, I think you always go to the source of the problem, who started it. That's just how it goes. Now, somebody might say Obama, whatever. Bottom line, it seems like everything that comes from the Clinton camp. I think that what needs to be sent a hard message from the DLC, Howard Dean, to the Clinton camp and tell them to close it, end it, and just forget about it.
I wish, you know, Howard Dean has a little bit of the, he might be the one person who has that power, and I'd like to see him wield it. Now, you know, Gary, yesterday you had the appearance on Meet the Press with Tim Russert and Hillary Clinton, and I guess that appearance will be remembered for her introduction to the political lexicon of the word Jesuitical.
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
But she said all this stuff about, instead of talking about herself, she spent a lot of time talking about what Senator Obama's position was or was not relative, among other things, to the war in Iraq.
Okay.
After that was over, Senator Obama issued a release in which he, it's a long paragraph, but the end of it, he says, I know, and tell me if this is a little bit snarky, okay? That's all I'm asking for here. I know that in Washington it is acceptable to say or do anything it takes to get elected, but I really don't think that is the kind of politics that is good for our party, and I don't think it is good for our country, and I think that the American people will reject it in this election. Now, a little bit before that, he said, I have to say that she started this campaign saying that she wanted to make history, and lately she's been spending a lot of time rewriting it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's snippy, too, okay? And I expect a certain degree of that in the campaign. And I'm not saying that I expect more, that I would subject one candidate to higher standards than I would another. But what I'm getting at is I want it all to stop. You know, the response I'd like to see is, well, not going to play that game. I want to talk about issues. What do you want to know about my health care plan? What do you want to know about my plan to keep jobs in America instead of outsourcing them? And frankly, I think voters would respond well to that, unless of course the pollsters are right and negative campaigning is still a big, popular, dirty mudslinging reality TV way of doing politics, and the American people want it that way. And I guess that's the ultimate inquiry. We'll find out by virtue of the electoral process, Gary, whether the American people want this stuff.
Yeah, but let's look at, did he point out with the about Hillary's past ties to the Republican Party when he made the statement?
No, and he hasn't called her the Goldwater girl, and no.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tend to think that...
But what I'm asking is that Hillary has come out lately, obviously, saying, being very pro, like, you know, civil rights and being, you know, part of that movement and all these other things when she kind of supported Goldwater and these people who start segregationists. So, what I'm trying to figure out is, How far should this go? You know, like, should we just be talking about the issues of today? If somebody makes a mention to something in the past, you know, that's kind of like a fine line. I guess my point of view is that I'm looking at it from more where is really the gunfire coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's shooting back, even if they shouldn't shoot back, I would kind of question and say, well, should the person just stand there and take fire? Because like you just said, Bill has used that strategy successfully. So should Obama just sit there and just take artillery fire? I mean, that's the question.
And that is the ultimate question, Gary.
Yeah.
And it's a question I think that only the American people can answer.
I would just think that Hillary and Bill, to me, I almost feel like what they're doing, Obama should be doing, because it's like, to me, it seems like them, you know, and like I said, you know, I like Bill and everything. I'm very disappointed in them, and that's probably why I kind of always have been leaning more toward Edwards anyway, because I just felt like he's always been on point on message about what's really the problem in this country. He wasn't so obsessed with himself and his own personal issues. He has personal issues with his wife, his son, and all the things, but he's so focused on doing the right thing.
Yeah, his daughter was hit by a drunk driver either today or yesterday. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's feeling American pain, he is. But yet, we got two camps. We're pretty much, and I feel like, again, I'll say, I feel the one camp is a little bit too obsessed with themselves. That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not really focusing on the American people. But the reality of it is, they are the two leads, and we're going to have to probably end up, unfortunately, picking one of the two.
Well, I know if it's Gary, I don't have any problem whatsoever saying that when I get down to my ceremonial primary vote in May here in West Virginia, if Edwards is completely out of the loop, and we will know by that time, I will run to the polls to vote for Barack Obama. But the position beyond that is, if Senator Clinton does become the presidential nominee of my party, I'm voting for her. I might have to go to the polls with a clothespin on my nose, but I'm voting for her.
I don't even know. You know, this thing is funny. I think this is probably a telling story, because I'm an African American, one of those people who used to love Clinton, probably would say, oh, yeah, he was the first black president, and joke about it. And I used to love Hillary Clinton. I just thought she was the greatest thing in the world. But over the years, I just kind of like have totally lost faith in them. And I'm just, you know, kind of concerned now about
I felt them. Profound sympathy for them. One, the Monica Lewinsky affair, had it been a Republican president, would not have been a Monica. It wouldn't have been an affair. It wouldn't have been a blip on the radar. There wouldn't have been a penny spent on an impeachment proceeding. We've seen with the Democratic Congress, Gary, how much a Democratic Congress is willing to put up with out of a Republican president and still say that impeachment is not on the table. Okay? I felt profound sympathy for Hillary Clinton. You know, their dearest friend, Vince Foster, becomes depressed, commits suicide, and to this day you can still find Republicans out there screaming that Hillary Clinton put the bullet in his head.
Yeah,
you know, and my heart just bled for them. And frankly, their decision to maintain their marriage, their decision to work through the Monica thing that should never have been anybody's business but theirs, that was played out on a public stage, was sickening and gut-wrenching to me. I can't imagine what it would be like for a wife to go through something like that. And frankly, as a guy, I can't figure out what it would be like to be a husband caught in that trap. And so, yeah, I'm right where you are. I felt tremendous sympathy for them.
But I'm not really knocking to me. I don't want to come off like I'm knocking Hillary anyway. It's not really about, to me, about Hillary. It's about, to me, it's like, you know, I was listening to Mike Mullard one night, and he kind of said this himself. He said he met her, and he just said, basically, said he just didn't get the feeling that she would be a good president. And I think it wasn't really attacked on her character. We know she's very smart, very strong, or whatever. But it's the question of, there's a time when you have so many enemies, so many people, and there's so much division around you, even if it's not your fault, that sometimes it's just best to pick somebody who can unite. Because in the end, to get things done, we're going to need a uniter. We've had a divider for the last 8 years. We cannot pick another person to put them in the White House that's going to isolate a certain percentage of Americans. I mean, that's just the bottom line. The Republicans are on the way out. Everybody has seen through them. And I don't understand why the Democrats, they're just so self-absorbed that they can't just play fair and just let the people decide. And I think that goes back to the whole thing that Hill and Hillary, as you just said, are just too wounded. They're just too wounded at this point. I mean, just too many hits. And at this point now, it might be best for us to pick someone else besides the Clinton dynasty. I mean, that's just my gut feeling. I think we really got to look to. I think this should be between Edwards and Obama. At this point.
I can certainly side with that opinion. I'll take it a step further, and say, Gary, that. I'm trying to figure out how best to express this. Senator Clinton has an entire industry arrayed against her, an industry that was created by the Republican Party in 1991 and has been built upon every year since. And as a consequence of that, sheerly on electability issues, part of that, you know, that may be the woundedness that you're talking about, that she is there is so much arrayed against her. You know, while I can say that if she's the nominee, I will go and I will vote for her in November, I know that for every me, there's a whole bunch of people who would vote for the devil himself instead of her, and it's expanded over into Democratic turf. And I don't like that at all, because the one thing we can be sure of is whatever their differences are during the primaries right now, the Republicans will run to the polls to vote for their nominee, and they will put aside their petty differences because Republicans are quite good at that. They vote Republicans. The Republicans in this country are the straight ticket voters. Walk in, punch one button, and walk out.
Well, it seems like to me at this point, everything plays out the way it seems to play. It's going to be McCain as president. When you add it all up with where things are actually going, it just seems that that's probably what's going to happen. Hell, maybe that won't be so bad. Maybe we still need a mixed government to get things done a certain way. You know, but that's how, you know, I'm starting to feel that's the way.
That terrifies me, because when John McCain says that it's okay if we're in Iraq for 100 years, he's not speaking. He may be speaking in abstract terms for himself, but he is speaking in very concrete terms to me, because I have a family of young people here that I can look at and know that he is lusting after their blood to put in that sand. So it becomes very, very real to me.
So don't you think, you know, as I always said, is that the American people deserve the president they get? Maybe the American people aren't that good of people as we think we are. Maybe the fact that we put somebody like Bush in there, maybe we're not as good as we think we are, the fact that we're sitting up here arguing over race, over some small comments that somebody made. Maybe we're just not that good, Bob.
I mean, does anybody actually think, Gary, that, I mean, the realignment of the Democratic Party that took place in the mid-60s was supposed to have cleansed us of the vile specter of racism? Does anybody actually think that there are Democrats out there who would choose Hillary over Obama on issues of race? God knows, I prefer not to think that.
Well, you know, I talked to one of my aunts the other night, and she's been very staunch about knocking me down a little bit, saying that she was saying that there's no way that white people will vote for a black man. She told me just get that out of my mind and just forget it. And I told her, I said in a joking way right before we got the phone, she kind of laughed about it. I said, you know things are bad when even white people vote for black people. And she kind of laughed about it for a little bit. But I, my whole thing is that I believe that people, once they see the fan, when they see that when mama is sick and dad ain't got no health care, you know, X, Y, and Z, and their kids, that people are going to try to vote for the person who's most authentic beyond skin color and beyond gender. That's what I wholeheartedly believe. Yes, I know there's some people who are not going to vote for Hillary because she's a woman. I know some people who are not going to vote for Obama because he's black. But I just cannot be that cynical to believe that most Americans will put their own self-interest aside.
See, that's the tough one, Gary, because I've seen it happen time and time again. There's no place like West Virginia for looking at people and saying, you know, why aren't you voting your wallet? Well, in 2004, they ran to the polls to vote for George Bush instead of the guy who was, you know, in favor of their wallet. They voted their bigotries. They voted their prejudices. They voted their hates. They voted their fears.
But I'm saying nationwide. I'm saying look at 2006 election. Look at the turnout in New Hampshire. The Democrats are, I just think the jig is up with the Republicans. Even the evangelicals are even switching away from them, you know. I mean, I think the American people have woken up. Now, I could be wrong, but, and maybe again I'm saying, you know, maybe the people aren't as good because, you know, you host a small radio show here while Rush Limbaugh, probably one of the most valuable people on earth, has like millions and millions of listeners. So you can take that for whatever it's worth. But I still think that the American people, you know, I may just be optimistic or whatever, are starting to wake up. I mean, Bob, I mean, you look at Cleveland. I mean, the foreclosure rate, it's just out of control. I mean, the stuff he's done with the banking industry, the scams, and the subprime lending, and it just wasn't black people. It was poor people in general, just not black.
And you know? and maybe that's a commentary, Gary, on where the American people have to get to. At the time of the Great Depression, you got to remember that it was a 10-year stranglehold or 12-year stranglehold of the Republican Party on government, and it was only broken by FDR when it had become crushingly obvious that the Republicans were incapable, incompetent to govern.
Well,
and only then did it happen.
So how far do they have to go to wake up? That's the...
Well, ask yourself how bad had it gotten by 1932?
Pretty bad.
Pretty doggone bad.
Well, I think we're a little bit more educated now about things than 1932. I mean, we do have the internet now. One thing I've noticed, people are getting a little bit more educated now on their own. I mean, when you talk to people about issues, I definitely see a change from like 1999 to 2007 just because of people on the internet reading stuff in their own kind of way, more customization. They're not just being totally force-fed stuff by the media. That being said, I think the media is a lot worse now than it was in 1999. You know, some people may not agree with that.
No, no, you'll get no fight out of me on that. No, it's bad and getting worse.
Yeah. So,
as far as the media are concerned, it's
so maybe everything's kind of equaling out. But like I said, man, I'm gonna stay with John Edwards as long as I can, and then after that, you know, I'll try to make a decision. You know. Maybe the dream ticket is Hillary, and, you know, if Hillary does win the nomination, that she'll just say, hey, you know what? The best way to mend the party is just go ahead and put Barack in as vice president. You know?
Maybe. But the sad thing is we won't know that until, what, July? Oh, we got a long road in front of us, Gary. We got a long road.
Hey, you know what? And John Edwards may have a lot to say about that, which is actually a good thing.
Yeah, I hope he does.
One way or the other, because he has the delegate.
I'd like to see him rise to full three-way split by the end of the evening, February 5th.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm gonna let you go.
All right, you take care, Gary. Good hearing from you, man.
I just wanted to let you know what's going on with me and the black community. I don't speak for all of us, but I think I kind of got a sense of some things that are going on this side.
Well, it means a great deal to me, Gary. It really, really does, because I feel a little bit uncomfortable, to say the least, sitting here babbling away, as you know, because I am, after all, the whitest man in America. You know, I'm white to the point of pink, and I feel a little off center because I don't want to be deemed as speaking for anybody. This is as much a learning. This show is as much a learning process for me as it is me. You know, because I don't do the marching orders thing, and I don't tell people how to think, and I don't tell people where to go or what to do. It's process for me, and I want to learn something out of it as well.
Well, one thing I want to say just right quick about Bob Johnson, just so you know, I mean, you probably already know this, but just your audience doesn't know who are white and don't know, Bob Johnson is a very despised man in the African-American community. I mean, he doesn't even come to the Black Caucus because he got booed a couple of years ago because of, you know, the BET and all the videos that they did over the years, and they just...
Did you see that card? Okay. That, wow, you just closed a loop for me there, Gary.
That's the thing with him.
That cartoon video about Read a Book that ran on BET, did you see that thing?
No, I haven't seen it. I'll Google it in a few minutes.
Oh, Lord. Sit down when you do, because it's, I mean, wow. It ran on BET. It was supposedly directed at, you know, the 24 to 39 black demographic. The N-word is every 15 seconds.
Well, see, the thing is, Bob's running around nothing. Well, I'm not the president. I sold the Viacom a couple of years ago, and blah, 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 blah. But Bob was really the one who introduced gangster rap on a mainstream level all across the nation. I mean, because that's what he ran in heavy rotation on his videos. And he took heat for a lot of years from that. So this whole thing about Imus and all this stuff, about the things that Imus said when he was making that, when Imus was making those points, that's where a lot of that stuff is, you know this, I know you're in the media and stuff, but a lot of people in the black community, especially people, I would say, maybe like college level and up, pretty much despise the guy. Like I said before, he's not even a black spokesperson.
So is that showing, as far as the Clinton camp is concerned, does that show a little bit of, not in touchness, they would use him as the point man on this issue?
It shows two things. First of all, he's a billionaire, so he has money and connections. So that says a lot right there. So, I mean, it's probably a donation thing going on.
Ah, so he's not a black guy. He's a green guy.
He's a green guy. And the other thing is, like I said before, they should have been very clear not to let him speak at all. I don't know who is running that campaign, but if they had came out and said, do not let Bob Johnson anywhere near a microphone say, he needs to say something positive, because he's not representative of what, particularly for the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a collective consciousness with this gangster rap, as you know, and all this other stuff that's come to the forefront. And they really despise this guy. That's why, this is another reason why this thing is really getting a lot of traction now, because Bob Johnson is a despised figure. For him to come out and attack Obama, and then for his own personal record, it's like a contradiction. Here's a guy who's trying to do, as a Harvard-educated guy, smart guy, things, put it together, this great campaign, got all these, convinced all these voters who are not of his, he's mixed, but what some people perceive couldn't be done, he's done it. And then here you are, this person who's made millions of denigrating the images of black women and black men, to get up and even speak against him. It's like the ultimate slap in the face. Clinton, I don't think, understand what they unleashed when they did that. That's why right now, when I said earlier, I don't know if I will vote for Hillary even if she gets elected, because of the fact that Bob Johnson was speaking. If he represents them, I can't vote for the Clinton. It's just that simple. I don't care what Republican's standing up there. Only if Republican, if it's Giuliani, then I will vote for her. Anybody else, I'll stay home. And that's kind of where I'm at. So I would have to see, and I think Clinton's going to have to come out and tell Bob Johnson and say, look, we made a mistake with this guy. I got to see that. If not, I'm on the fence. And I think a lot of other black people are slowly going to start to do that. Trust me on that one.
So you'd just leave the presidential race blank? Or, I mean...
I just won't show up.
Wow.
I just won't vote. It's just that simple.
That's tough. That's tough.
It's
I mean,
tough.
That...
Because that tells me if you get in the White House, you're still not going to be sensitive. Not just my issue, maybe somebody else's issue. It's almost telling me that you're really just running an image campaign. And I'm not interested in that. I mean, I really want somebody who's serious.
Yeah, you want meat on the bones and not, you don't want to get filled up on marshmallows.
Yeah, but my vote has to count, Bob. I'm not into this. Well, don't get vote because you're going to let the Republicans. I don't really vote that way anymore. I don't think strategically like that anymore. When I vote from a spiritual level on my point. Of the person who I'm voting for, I believe that they're actually going to do the job, not voting against someone else.
So something. Now, I know you said you were going to ring off a minute ago, and I kept you going. I got to ask you one last question, though, in light of what you just said, Gary. And that is, having seen in the past year, especially with the Supreme Court's case where they basically gutted and invalidated Brown versus Board of Education with the people they've got on the court right now, having seen that and knowing what it means to have a Republican in the White House who can add to that majority, you'd still stay home?
I probably, like I said before, I just said it, depending on which Republican is in there. I said Giuliani, I would have to, the reason, that's why I prefixed it that way. I'll have to.
But, I mean, if it's Huckabee, you're not going to get a sane Supreme Court nominee. And McCain's not going to do it either, because when it comes right down to it, McCain has this habit of looking like a moderate and acting like a conservative.
Well, like I said before, it'll be something I have to think about. But I'll be honest with you, that's kind of where I'm at a little bit with this. I mean, at this point, like I said earlier, the American people are going to vote for certain people because for certain reasons, then the country has to be what it's going to be. I mean, you can't ask anyone to vote for somebody or something that they don't believe in that person is going to do the job, and not say, okay, well, you got to also think about some 18 other kind of triangulations of what the Republicans may do. I don't know if I can go to that level at this point.
Well, I certainly understand it, and I won't gainsay
it. Where you're coming from, but I don't really get into that kind of level of triangulation.
It's just that the Supreme Court, as it stands now, knowing what a young man Alito and Robert, what young men, relatively speaking, Alito and Roberts are, they're going to be on the court for 40 years.
Yeah.
Scalia is going to be on the court for another 20 years, because these guys don't just drop dead. You know what I mean? They're cared for like I don't know, prize racehorses or something, Supreme Court justices. They live to 90 and beyond. So we know that Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito are going to be there for 20 years at the very least. And with Kennedy on their side, they managed to overturn Brown versus Board of Education last year, which just fills me with dread. And we know where they want to take they want to take those issues next. I mean, we see it in the questioning that came down about the voter ID, the ID at the polling places law. It's when I sit down and I consider those things very, very seriously, Gary, that I come to the conclusion that I can't stay home and I can't not vote for the Democratic nominee, simply because I know the kind of Supreme Court justice nominee that you're going to get out of a McCain or out of a Huckabee or out of a Giuliani, and frankly, at this point in time, it looks to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it looks to me like Giuliani and Romney and Fred Thompson are dead in the water, and you're going to get either Huckabee or McCain. And frankly, neither one of those gives me any hope for the future.
Well, Bob, when they had the 2004 election, I was the first person at my polling booth. I got up as early as I could to be the first person to try to vote George Bush out of office. I went there, you know, I even did some stuff with the Democratic Party with Howard Dean, worked on some other things. And what I've kind of concluded looking at it over everything is that this, whichever the way the wind is blowing for this country, it's going to go the way it's going to go. And there's no stopping it. And I know that to some degree, in other words, what I'm saying is that American people have to make a decision on themselves to pick the right person, not just in the presidential election, Bob, but I'm saying even in the primary election, because I was really not a big supporter of Edwards. I mean, not a supporter of John Kerry. Again, I was still a John Edwards supporter. I actually started out Dennis Kucinich, and I think he still is. I love him. But the fact of the matter is they're not getting there. We continue to elect people who are unelectable. I told my mother, she loves John Kerry. I said, this guy is not going to get elected. I could tell right from the beginning. I knew that he was not. I just had a good gut feeling about it. And it wasn't just a good gut feeling. It was just something I saw about him that I said, it's just not going to fly. It's not going to work. He's not the right person. He's not the right time. You know, I think we all know in life, you know, it's like when you date somebody, you meet somebody and say, wow, meet a lot of different people, but this person I'm dating right now, she's the one. I mean, when you met your wife, you said, you knew, you probably said she's the one. You knew it. And just the same way I feel about Edwards or, you know, other candidates, this is their time. Mm-hmm. Anything else that I do, to me, you know, I don't think I can come back and say, well, let me do something that's secondary to that.
Well, it's very interesting, you know, the idea that this is their time. I just got an email in, Gary, with regard to BET's Robert Johnson and what you were saying. This person writes, it's the Clintons looking back. Bill and Hillary want to party like it's 1992. Barack is looking forward, and America wants more of the future and less of what used to work. And so, you know, seeing the leveraging of Robert Johnson as a backward glance to what, you know, what was in 1992 versus the reality of what is in 2008. Man, that's 16 years ago. Hard for me to believe. It seems like yesterday to me.
Well, I don't want to keep rambling on. I guess what I'm going to ask you a question like this. What I'm saying is that as a black voter, my vote is not guaranteed. That's what I'm ultimately trying to say.
Oh, and you know what? I think, frankly, in many ways, I think that's a wise strategy because there is an element. You know, we've been told that, you know, the black vote was guaranteed to Hillary Clinton, and then the black vote was guaranteed to Barack Obama. I think that any politician who takes any voter bloc for granted or as guaranteed is looking for a whipping. Because
my vote is guaranteed for John Edwards.
All right. Hey, Gary, I love right. these conversations, man. Thank you so much.
All right, man.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. And I've got some, well, let's see if there's still somebody here. Nope. The way the media jumps on stuff, and I'm not telling you this because I advocate a position on it one way or the other, but just to see And that question is very, very valid, and I think answered in the affirmative. Does the media drive some of this garbage? Absolutely the media drives this garbage, because when the media picks up on a story, say, you know, Hillary bawled her eyes out when not a single tear fell, you know, she wasn't hysterical. You got George Bush in Jerusalem at the Holocaust Museum going, Jesus, why didn't we bomb them? And the tears are flowing and yada, yada, yada. Nobody does stories that say George Bush got hysterical at the Holocaust Museum, even though he was suggesting, you know, bombing people in concentration camps, which, you know. So on a right-wing website, I look up and I see, did Obama camp use rap to call Hillary bitch? As talking about the acceptance speech or victory speech in Iowa, as Obama and his wife Michelle walked triumphantly into his victory party following his surprising win over Hillary in the Iowa caucuses, the sound system blared rapper Jay-Z's song 99 Problems. The song contains the lyrics, I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. See how this crap gets manufactured? I got another example of it for you. And it's crap manufactured by... you know, by the mainstream, the so-called mainstream media. It's a matter of, what's her name, Monica Crowley. This sort of not quite as obnoxious looking as Ann Coulter person on the McLaughlin group. So McLaughlin is asking the panel, including Monica Crowley, their view on Hillary Clinton's so-called come from behind victory in New Hampshire. Where does Monica Crowley go with it? Just where you would expect a member of the mainstream media to go.
Let's go to the big enchilada, who is, of course, Hillary. What did you think of Hillary's performance?
Well, you know, she's like Glenn Close at the end of Fatal Attraction. You think she's dead, and then she sits bolt upright in the bathtub. Look, I think that...
Ho, 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 ain't that funny? Oh, we're making jokes about Hillary Clinton being dead. If we made a joke about George Bush dropping over dead, we'd be up to our asses in Secret Service and in Guantanamo before we could say boo. That's right, Hillary Clinton is like a sociopathic homicidal freak in a horror movie. Nice. I mean, I can understand why they'd be a little touchy on the Clinton campaign side of things, too, just to be, you know, lest there be any misunderstanding about my position.
Both Eleanor and Pat are correct when they say that the moment was probably authentic on her part, and she certainly leveraged it to her advantage.
No setup.
The moment was probably authentic on her part, and she leveraged it to her advantage. That's the hysterical weeping thing, mind you. No artifice? No contrivance? No, I think it was real.
Question?
Well,
no counterfeit there at all?
Well, look, I think she has been told to soften her approach. She's been told to wear softer colors, and I think she's...
How stupid do they think we are? Honest to Jesus, how stupid do they think we are? We vote on a candidate. We vote for a candidate because she's chosen to wear softer colors. Jesus, does that mean it? Does that mean if Dennis Kucinich comes out in pink, the world will gravitate to him? Want to talk about sexism? How's that for sexism? Let's see. We have John Edwards' hair and Hillary Clinton's color combinations. Oh, she's a winter. Lord God! It is going to be so hard to get from now to November. I hope you don't see this as making it worse. I'm trying to exorcise the demon, if you will. Let's get this out of the way. Let's talk about it in normal terms. Let's see the dog and pony show that these dirtbag sleaze-mongering freaks in the so-called professional media are trying to turn us into, Monica Crowley. And she wants to talk about Hillary Clinton's color choices? You should see the photograph of her over at Crooks and Liars with her little, her little prairie pioneer woman, puffy shouldered sleeve, gunmetal blue silk tight buttoned up to the neck thingy going on. Holy cats! Oops, I'm as bad as the rest of them. So, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of balance involved in all of this stuff because I do understand how they could be the Clintons a little bit, you know, sort of hair triggery about all this stuff. Let's see who we've got here. Hi, who am I talking to?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Well, you're on a good subject. Let's see, what was it, last week or the week before? Tweety Bird was using terms about Hillary saying, about facing Obama, said, well, what's she going to do, hide the body, you know, all this stuff. He was using a whole lot of violent references, you know what I mean, wordings.
Yeah, and now Monica Crowley's got her as a murderess.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what was the thing yesterday, if you saw the Russert thing, where he tried to cut up a statement Bill Clinton made and used, like, the last line of it. Then Hillary stopped him and wouldn't let him interrupt until she read the whole statement. He was reading, doing the fairy tale statement, and like he just played like the last line of it, which if you take the last line sounds bad, but when you hear the whole statement, it's not.
I heard it and I didn't think it was a racist statement to begin with.
No, but I mean,
I thought it was a pretty sharp the Bill Clinton-esque attack.
Mm-hmm.
On Barack Obama.
And like I say, and the thing of it was, there's Tim Russert, you know, the number one, can't use the word, I won't do it, the number one mouthpiece. I won't use some of the things Bart Cop says about him, but
yeah.
You know, there he is cutting up a statement so he can get like one line and say, well, how do you react to this? You know, it's one of those things. Sometimes you wish some of the people doing all this stuff, you know, the so-called media critics would occasionally hold some of the big boys up to the mirror and say, "Look here, here's what you said." You know, I love somebody to take some statements of Tim Russert and play back to him and say, "Tim, why did you say these racist comments?"
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
You know, it'd be fun to see him on somebody else's show, like, you know. I don't think Oberman would do it, but it'd be fun to get him on somebody's show where they just, you know, just cut him up once or twice. You know what I mean? Here's what you said, Tim. Oh, you didn't say that. That was the last line you
yeah,
said?
Yeah, you'd just like to see somebody respect. Tim, you ignorant slut.
What? That would be a good place. Oh, but you know what I mean? It's one of these things. It's, well, you know, we were talking about Tweety Bird last week. Here he was Tuesday night, gets dressed down by Tom Brokaw. You know, as you watch him slowly turning into Captain Queeg all night, you know.
Yeah, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled him. I got him with the strawberries.
You know, and the next morning, there he is going on Morning Joe. That's when he made the statement about the only reason Hillary was elected. You know, it was because Bill was fooling around.
Oh, I know. Well, let me ask you this then, Luke. Do you think they're doing this because they're... Is this some sort of bizarre reverse psychology where they're trying to get her elected so they'll have her to hammer on for 4 or 8 years just like they did Bill? Were those the halcyon salad days of American media in the last 20 years, getting to lead the news every blessed night with a story about, you know, some made-up crap about the Clintons?
But, you know, I think part of it, though, what some of them have said is one of the reasons they're, and I won't say pushing, one of the reasons they're, the bunch of the reporters are apparently in the Obama mania camp is apparently they want a new story. It's like, we've done this for 16 years.
But how new? But Luke, how new is it? I mean, the attempt to turn this into a race / gender contest is not creative.
Oh no! You remember what was it? This probably back better than a month ago. Remember when Bill Clinton was talking about the Swift boat thing, and they were saying, well, he's saying Hillary's being Swift voted. And I finally heard the tape on C-SPAN. It took forever to find it, you know, find him playing it. And what he talked about was when he was talking about the things that had happened over the years and talking about the Swift voting of John Kerry. And from that, they took it and said, well, Bill Clinton claimed his wife's being Swift voted.
I know.
All he has to do is make one sentence, and like I say, they'll take it, you know, around the mulberry bush a few times, and they'll make it into something else by the time, you know, it's the old, you know, tell 10 people in a circle, you know, one line, and by the time it gets back to you, you won't recognize it.
Yeah.
And that's virtually the way it is. But, you know, some of these things, you're just sitting there going, you know, it's like an MSNBC, you know, but these are people who have Oberman, so I have some, you know, I like some of the things they do. I can stand Abrams, that's okay. But sometimes you've got to wonder, is somebody in charge who's sitting there looking, going, we need to take Chris into the corner and tell him, quit this, or we're going to hit him with a ruler.
Yeah, and what's this business about Oberman rules MSNBC now, and it's driving Chris Matthews crazy? Did you see that?
Well, you know what part of that was, though, don't you? You've seen the last couple of years. You know, Matthews has tried to reinvent all of his history back in the, remember the, you know, Chris was one of the cheerleaders back when we had the Mission Accomplished thing. Remember, he went on and was just gushing for that.
Big Bush man crush. Oh, I remember it.
Uh-huh. And, you know, now when you hear him talk about it, oh, I was against it from the beginning. Totally against it. And I'm sitting there going, look, the only one at your station that was totally against it was a guy named Donahue. And we saw what happened to him, and you didn't raise a finger saying anything then. In fact, you had some of the people on that were doing it.
Now, this will be interesting to see the MSNBC response. AP is reporting, Luke, that a Nevada judge has said that Dennis Kucinich must be included in the Tuesday debate there in Vegas.
That's fine with me.
No, it's fine. Well, it's fine with me, too. The more ideas, the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. But he also said if they exclude him that he'll issue an injunction shutting it down.
Understandable. That's fine with me. You know what I mean? I'm sure that tomorrow they'll see the light. Oh, we have to bring everybody in that wants to talk. You know.
Yeah.
It's sort of when CNN had their thing. It's like Alan Keyes is alive and running for president. You're kidding.
How'd he get in here?
But you were talking a minute ago about the Supreme Court. All of a sudden, it just hit me. I had the best idea in the world. Whichever Democrat gets elected, how would this strike you? Supreme Court Justice Ralph Nader.
It would. You know, I'd like that. The only problem is we need a Ralph Nader who's about 40 years younger.
I know, but it'd be fun just to watch Scalia vapor lock.
Yeah. Oh, somebody get the paddles. Oh, I'm dying again.
Up the voltage, up the voltage.
Clear. No kid. Yeah, that would be fun. But then again, you got to understand. Scalia's going to vapor lock over any Supreme Court nominee to the immediate left of Adolf Hitler.
I know. Well, I tell you what, if he doesn't win the nomination, how would Supreme Court Justice John Edwards sound?
I like that. And if he ever gets his law license back, Supreme Court Justice Bill Clinton sounds pretty good too. Except for where it comes to ruling on things like NAFTA.
I think John Paul Stevens is a great man, but he can't hang on much longer. You know what I mean?
With people like Ann Coulter out there threatening to poison his creme brulee,
it's one of those things.
If I'd been him, I would have gotten an injunction against her for stalking.
Oh, I tell you what, it's one of those things. I tell you what. It's like, say, I'm surprised on that one. Somebody didn't have the report of the Secret Service coming over and knocking on her door. It's like, look, that's like threatening a president. If you want to sit there and do that, then we'll have you in an orange jumpsuit.
She needs to be doing that from Guantanamo. No kidding.
But it's like, say, I'm hoping that we get a Democrat. Like, say, we need to pick a couple 40-year-olds or 35, 45-year-olds. If that's going to be the case, we need a John Edwards. Like you say, I'd love to have a Bill Clinton on there. Because, it'd be fun having him and Scalia go at it in arguments. Because Scalia likes to think he has, high intelligence.
Oh, Scalia likes to think he's an intellectual. But, as is always the case with so many of those people.
Bill Clinton in one-on-one like that, he'll find out what the word intellectual means.
True.
Well, let's see what else is going on in the world. Because, we need to pay attention to more than this. Because,
I almost opened the program by saying America in crisis. Britney Spears fails to show for court appearance.
Oh God.
Yeah, I know.
Well, turn on TMZ. I'm sure they know where she is.
they know where she is all the time. Yeah.
But the thing right now, most people, this thing out in California now, Arnold's had to cut programs out there 10% across the board. Because they're in a budget crisis.
Yeah, and somehow I don't think you can call. Yeah, that's not liberal policies putting him in. No.
But you know what I mean. And I understand it. We're getting dead set on the elections. But we need to pay attention to what else is going on in the world. Because like I say, before you know it, something's happened. Before you know it, it's like this thing now with Bush over there. It's like, dear God, it's he's on the farewell tour. We hope, we pray.
Well, I've seen some photographs. In fact, I was corresponding with our good buddy Clyde from WD40.com because they've always got to caption this photo up.
Yeah.
And I saw a photograph of it's a close. There was this moment where some sheik or whatever showed George his prize hunting falcon.
Oh gosh.
And there was some intrepid photographer. Got a photograph tightly shot with the falcon's head in the front and Bush's head just slightly behind and off to one side. And that's all there is in the photograph is the falcon and Bush. And I sent it off to Clyde saying, you got to put this up on the caption this because, I said, and I'll offer the first caption, bird brain, you figure it out. Or then there's hawk, chicken hawk.
True enough.
So that there I go talking about photos on the radio again.
Well, I say, but everybody can turn over there and see it. You know what I mean? That's nice. We'll get everybody over to WD40. Take a look at his numbers go up a little bit. We hope, we pray.
Yeah.
But it's some of these things sometimes where you're sitting here watching them, but you're just kind of going The reality police sometimes you think should come in and just start beating people over the head. It's like, dummies, quit this! It's one of those lessons times you're just like, God.
Oh, I don't know. One of these days we'll get big enough to start movements and things like that. And I don't know. This one I think we should call the Stop It Coalition. StopItCoalition.org. I don't know.
It's one of those things, it's like we've said before, quit arguing among each other. Tell people what you want to do, and they'll tell them what they want to do, and we'll go from there. Let's like I say, quit sitting here shooting at each other, and forget about shooting at the. It's like I say, we sit here fighting each other. It's like, guys, we're fighting the Republicans. You know, tell me what you're going to do for the country, and if you have the better
idea. Hey, we'll do that as soon as we're done with the circular firing squad. Fire!
It's like, guys, you know, just tell me what your economic plan is to bring us back. Tell me what your economic plan is back. Let the people pick. You know, let's get that out there first. You know, I mean, then, you know, somewhere down the line, like I say, when you have the debate, that's where you can talk about this. But you know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's what you should be out there telling people. What are you going to do? How are you going to fix this? You know, how are you? You know, it's like say. Like we talked about, you know, with the economy.
But it's a double-edged sword, Luke, because if they start talking about what they're going to do, then the Republicans will have it swift-boated and twisted into everything that it isn't by the time the general election comes along. I do understand the paranoia of presidential candidates. It's a lot easier to talk about whether you prefer corn dogs or pizza.
Well, and the thing of it is, we're sitting here with all this stuff going on. It's like, look, folks, you all want to have fun doing this? That's fine. You know, chew each other up. Just wait till after the convention. You think you've seen stories come out that you ain't gonna like. It's like say if you're up against McCain or Huckabee, you know what's gonna come down the road. You know what I mean? It's stuff that we're gonna cringe at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I tell you what, we have found out one thing.
Namely,
Giuliani can now play the Invisible Man. It's like Rudy sitting back waiting for that powder to dry, and yeah, that powder's going to dry eventually.
Yeah, here, let's take a blowtorch to the powder and dry it out a little faster.
Because, dang, you know, he is just literally falling off the radar.
Yeah, but it's all going to turn around for him in Florida.
Oh, gosh.
Not. By the way, did you see the picture of the great big, is there a better metaphor out there? Did you see the picture of the great big Republican candidate sandheads in South Carolina?
Oh, yes, I did. I saw that. Oh, God, they were describing them. It's like, oh, God.
Oh, the one where Fraud Thompson, half-dead Fred, looks like Darth Vader forehead. With the helmet off?
Yeah. But that's what it looks like without the helmet, huh?
Sandheads. You know, perfect, how perfect. Just concrete skulls.
And somebody should come by with a big water pistol. And that's all they turn into is slush.
Hey, kid, here's your super soaker. Have a blast. Hey, Luke, you have a great night, all right?
You too, bud. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, onward and outward and aroundward and whatever. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, David, how are you?
Yes, I just wanted to say one brief thing that put in perspective for me what Randy said. Why do we have these people constantly bickering and battering? And she nailed it, Bob. She nailed it. She said, because the networks need advertising money. One person starts out. Another person starts out. Hey, we have a free space over here. You want to respond to that? We'll give you a real discount.
Yeah, and it bears remembering for those people. And I know a lot of them, David, who give to political campaigns because they believe it's the right thing to do. And because they're constantly told, well, you know, we can't fight back against the Republicans without a lot of money. And instead of saying, okay, I understand that, why don't you get with it and get busy on publicly financed campaigns and get the dirty money out of it, they give the money. And it bears remembering, David, that every time we give money to a political candidate, you know where the money winds up? You know, it's not going to an offshore account to pay for the cushy retirement of said politician, because most of them already have money of their own. It is going specifically to the major media outlets. And the politician is only a pass-through.
You know, I was thinking of what you were saying about Bob Johnson. I just wanted to comment on what Gary was saying. I think people should know that there was a time when I used to look on message boards and people would be really talk a lot about in the hip-hop culture, and also they had a lot of hosts who had a lot of great topics and just covered the spectrum on that channel. They had, let's remember, that's where Tavis Smiley got his start. And now he works for PBS. When he left BET, it was probably because they had turned it into the slave network. Or whatever you want to call it. Because seriously, that's what it's become if you think about it. Because, you know, a lot of people on TV, you have to scream and animate yourself above someone else. Someone has to be more amplified than the next person, which makes it look dumber and dumber as it goes along. The effect starts to wear off, basically. But the thing that people should realize about Bob Johnston is that he wanted to inject poison from the first day. It was just that he hired creative people, and the creative people were eventually going to do him in with the arts. Like, hey, what if we do this on this channel? And eventually he realized, why am I still messing around with this? I'm on this level. He wanted to get in with the black community and the cultures and the West Coast, the East Coast, the North and South. He wanted to appeal to everyone in the urban communities, and he did that. And he had programs like Rap City, where Rap City was a unique animal unto itself, because you could go on that show and you could freestyle or battle, as they say, and you didn't have to be a signed artist. That right there, people, that right there had to stop quick, because if you were on there every week and someone from Tolucaville came on there and beat someone from New York City or who was signed to Columbia or Universal or what have you, that right there looks bad. So they pulled Rap City out after a while too, because they didn't have they had the control of the videos, but you know, there was still that bit where, okay, we need to change the format again. They wanted to keep out basically the public and just keep like the whole corporate mascots in place. But, you know, the best commentator to me on Bob Johnston, Bob,
yeah,
is the black Gary Trudeau, Aaron Magruder of Boondocks. Always had, I mean, if you go back to his comics, he was always the one who put out there. He was the first one, really, to step up against Bob Johnston. People really if people are experiencing amnesia, because you can go back to his comic strips, and he was the first one who just said it dead point blank in his column, like the Slave Network, aka Bob Johnston's company, basically. And there was an episode, I believe, an ingenious episode, which I suggest everyone watch to see where we are now culturally in the urban in the urban perspective for life in the African American and black culture, and just in general, all minorities, which are basically becoming a majority, let's face that. Eventually, everyone will become more culturally literate. Hopefully, if we have people like Bob Johnston, maybe not. But one of the episodes that Aaron Magruder did was he did one on Martin Luther King, and he said, "What if Martin Luther King didn't die, and he came back from a coma?" And basically, Martin Luther King had to deal with the culture shock of what it had become. Of what had become his dream. And people, you gotta see it. I think you can click it on YouTube if you search Boondocks Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
And the episode will come up, and you'll see his commentary on like Bob Johnston, BET, and Martin Luther King facing with it, how he faces R. Kelly, how he faces the O.J. Simpson situation. And you know, it's just something to keep in perspective that Well, to me, when you're dealing with the Clintons, I'll be point blank with you, Bob. I never liked them. I always think when you get close to someone, you get so close to someone, you start really pandering to them. The effect, you start to see, like, really who those people are. I'd rather have Satan than Satan's envoy, to tell you the truth. That's the way I look at it. And if people are going to bring down the Clintons, to me, that's just karma. And I hope more people continue to expose whatever it is they've done in the
okay
past.
But can I ask you a question, David?
Yeah.
Is your antipathy toward the Clinton sufficient to make you feel okay with a Huckabee presidency or a Giuliani presidency or a Romney presidency or a McCain presidency?
No, but Bob, you know what? I mean,
this isn't an attack. It's a straight question, and
I know I have an answer for that too. A lot of people just look at everything as entertainment, right? Who do you think is responsible for putting Huckabee in the limelight? Partly responsible, Stephen Colbert. Were people even paying attention to him that much? He came on and he showboated and he performed, And how many times did Colbert have him on again? And what did they say? Oh, he's a nice guy. Thanks for coming on, Huckabee. You're a great sport. And see, this is what people don't realize.
And he, yeah, and he shows up on Letterman, and he shows, and he crosses the picket line, and he scabs himself up by showing up on Leno.
Right.
I understand some of that, and I understand that he's the media darling. And the question I keep asking, and in fact, I saw it referred to today.
Yeah.
This is a quote from an AP story, the Associated Press. He is referred to as former. Here it is. Republican Mike Huckabee. This is Dateline Spartanburg, South Carolina, from the Associated Press yesterday. Republican Mike Huckabee spoke from the pulpit Sunday, not, and this is the operative phrase, not as a politician, but as the preacher he used to be. Okay, see, that's an outright lie.
Yeah.
He didn't used to be a preacher. He is still a preacher. He is still an ordained minister within the Southern Baptist Convention. He's never stopped being one. If we're going to work on framing issues like this, you know, we know how far behind the eight ball we are because people won't even talk honestly about him. He is not former Governor Mike Huckabee. He is current Reverend Mike Huckabee. If you want to take the frame a little bit further, David, let's refer to him as fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, and I think that's a problem. But my answer is, why do people keep giving the spotlight? I guess it's just entertainment for the edge of oblivion. Really.
No, it's because American journalists are you know, old hound on the porch, lazy. Okay, I mean lazy. This takes the place. I mean, do you think that the journalism centers, be they the New York Times, the Washington Post, the print media. Or the TV media, or even the radio news media, do you think that they don't look forward to this like a kid looks forward to Christmas? It means they don't have to work for a year. You don't have to go out there and get complicated stories about Dick Cheney undermining the EPA and causing a fish kill in the Great Northwest that you have to expend real brain cells the writing and doping out. No. This is easy. It's just the black horse is in front of the white horse, or the white horse has gained a nose on the black horse. Okay, and that's who fosters this crap. You know, Colbert, okay, I can understand your position on that. But this is a function more than anything else of pure, unmitigated laziness in the fourth estate of this country. And over a period of time, they have inoculated the American people to expect this kind of coverage. You know, because we don't sit down, and you can't do economic or healthcare policy in the space of a 90-second package on video package on CNN or any of your other evening newses. Some of this stuff takes depth, and depth is something that American journalists simply cannot do anymore.
Well, I think that's also partly because of the feedback loop that the American public, that's what they want to read. And they continue to read that.
That's what they've been told they want to read.
I know, but listen, that right there is that they're just giving them what it is that they inoculated with them, and if you want to use that term. And but eventually, it's going to come to us where we have to say no. All of us. Now,
well, a whole bunch of us already have.
I know, but when I say all of us, that's a lot more than a whole bunch of us. You know that, Bob. And you know, when you poll someone on these streets and just do a normal poll and you ask people what it is, you can go into any diner and they'll be talking about the debates on Fox 9 times out of 10 if they're a businessman who just coming in for lunch or whatever, and they'll be talking about who they like and who they don't like and who's a fool and who's a sucker and that kind of thing. And that means that there needs to be a serious, like you said, a disastrous event, whether it's financially or environmentally or something. There needs to be this catalyst event.
But you know what scares the dickens out of me?
Yeah.
We've had it, okay? We had it 2 years ago. We had a natural catastrophe that pulled the curtains back, yanked the rubber mask off, and showed America exactly what poison the Republican Party is to the American people, didn't matter. Didn't matter. I had an impassioned request from a listener a couple of minutes ago, saying, you know, let's talk about this instead of politics. Apparently, after seeing more than 76,000, never mind the details. But what it boils down to is the Mississippi National Guard troops are being dispatched to Trinidad and Tobago instead of working on Katrina stuff.
Bob, it has to do with what you were saying earlier. It has to affect all of us. If the media projects something and tells us to feel sympathy or emotion for people in the city, that won't affect everyone. And I guess what I'm saying is we're going to have to infect, or rather, if you say, or we'll use your term, inoculate sheep, sociopaths, psychos, jerks, racists, losers, whiners, just the whole gamut of the cross section of the United States. And that did not happen with Katrina. That won't happen, because when they turn on the TV, there is no emotional feeling to be felt. And the TV has led us down that road, as evidence of bringing back American Gladiators.
Oh, I noticed that. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, in closing, I just say that there needs to be. You said that there was a cataclysmic event. Yes, but that's the same reason why the tsunami in Indonesia, because it was not felt by the majority, and we need to infect all of the whole of the people, even the people that we despise the most.
Okay, let's go ahead and say it, David.
Yeah.
You kind of beat around the bush there.
Yeah.
It has to affect white people.
It has to affect a lot of white people.
No. I'm not arguing with you. That's what made Katrina easy to ignore.
No. I wasn't even thinking of that.
I know. But, I mean, it's the natural upshot of what you were saying. And it's true. It's true. When, this country only turned around in the Great Depression when the ubiquitous Wall Street bankers started crawling out on the ledge. White Wall Street bankers.
Well, I think also it has to do with a certain class of economics as well. I admit that the black is a factor, but I think if we did have the whitest ghetto inner city in America, they would.
Yeah, it is. It is. No. I get you. It is economics because if it happens to poor people, in Republican world, if it happens to poor people, it doesn't happen.
Right. Well, I'll put it this way. If it happens to poor black people, it's twice as worse. I see what you're saying.
But this is a nation that will ignore the disasters that have a largely racial demographic overtone to them, because that's the kind of country America is, David.
Here's an evil thing to say, but probably the best thing that could happen in this country is to hit rock bottom.
Well, you are not the first to say it, and I'm not denigrating you saying it by saying it. You're not the first to say it, and you're not going to be the last. I mean, so many of the conversations I have on this program, David, resonate with me and stay with me for a long, long time. And I've still got in my head a long conversation that I had with our good friend Scott up in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago, where he said, I've just about come to the conclusion that we've got to let this country bottom out. And the thing is, we keep bottoming and bottoming and bottoming, and it's like sinking into the ooze at the bottom of a river. It's all ooze. There's no damn bottom. And that's what scares the dickens out of me.
Well, like I said, that cataclysmic event that crosses state to state to state, that has to happen.
Well, if the housing crisis, the bankruptcy crisis, whatever, subprime mortgage crisis, however you care to describe it, if that thing blossoms the way that it's being said to, maybe that's the beginning of it. But
Bob, you know what they'll say about that one, right? They'll say, they shouldn't have bought the house, those stupid people.
Gonna say? Are saying.
Yeah, I know.
This is a function of predatory lenders lending money to people who had no business getting loans. I've heard liberals say that.
Yeah, I know. I know. And it does, see, that's another thing too. It's like when I read an article about this. It has to do with Murdoch keeping Kucinich off the airwaves and punishing him for what he was doing to his network. And he said there was a quote there that Mitt Romney said. When he said in a debate, he goes, whenever someone says that there's two Americas, I want to throw something at the TV set. And that right to me, that is a striking statement, because what it means is there is this feeling of being pulled into reality that they don't want to face. The fact that you want to be on that island forever. And Bob, the truth is no one is ever going to be on that island forever. You all have to face disaster and darkness surrounding you eventually, and you can just hide out on that island if you want to.
Yeah, and sooner or later the Rupert Murdochs of the world wind up, here's another movie reference, up as the Laurence Olivier character at the end of Marathon Man, standing in the sewer in New York eating diamonds.
There you go. That's pretty much it, and I'm glad that Kucinich's people are
well, I'm glad they've apparently succeeded in court in Nevada.
I hope he is on the debate, because I think one of the most revealing signs for me on the debate when I turned it on was watching Bill Richardson. I don't know if you have that quote, Bob, but you should cue it up. When he talks about, boy, I'm sick of raising the flag at half mast, and you can look at all the people around in the room, and there's no emotional reaction whatsoever. They're looking at their paper, and it's
yeah, because they've never had to raise the flag at half mast.
Yeah, that's right, and also, it doesn't affect them. And if it doesn't affect them and you become numb to the system, that's a dangerous, dangerous place to be for the majority of America. If you could find that quote, that would be good. For people who don't watch the lame brain debates, I bet it's on YouTube or something.
What, yeah, that's worth a look. I will.
Bill Richardson just rips into him for 3 minutes. And the commentator is starting to laugh a little bit, like, okay, we understand, ha-ha. But no, what he was really saying was he wanted to get a reaction out of all of them. He looked up and he said, aren't you tired of this? No reaction from Hillary. No reaction from Obama.
Crickets.
Yeah, they just kept looking at their paper. And that, to me, is revealing that someone is not with the people. And when someone's not with the people, that there needs to be some, we need to have a conference table at the war room immediately.
Yeah. David, good points. Thank you very much.
All right, Bob.
Take it easy.
Later.
Bye now. All right, and let's see if you're still there. You are, you are. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, how are you, dear?
Oh, I guess fine. Hey, I have a comment, but before that, how close is your tinfoil hat?
It's never out of reach.
Just wanted to lay what Stephanie Miller would call a conspiracy sausage on you.
Okay, go.
Okay. Let's be PC here and say alleged Republican mastermind, evil mastermind, decides to destroy the Democratic Party. How to do it? He says, aha, perfect way to do it. What he does is he has his minions look at a early primary, and the two front runners, he flips their election. And then he sits back and chortles as the Democratic Party rips itself to pieces.
That's pretty elegant.
Not to mention, just keep things rolling. The operative number one, go out and say, candidate A said this. Operative number two, go out and say, candidate B said this. Just keep it rolling.
Well, what if that operative's Karl Rove?
Could very well be.
Let's see. How's this for a smear on Obama? This is from Crooks and Liars. Carl, and just reading directly from their post. Karl Rove begins his racist smear campaign in the Wall Street Journal against Obama and is not even subtle about it. He sends out the call to the right that this is where they need to go to smear him. Quote, her remarks helped wash away the memory of her angry replies to attacks at the debate's start, speaking of Hillary Clinton. His trash-talking, and this is talking about his referring to Obama, his trash-talking was an unattractive carryover from his days playing pickup basketball at Harvard and capped a mediocre night. And then, you know, okay, so we've made the black basketball reference. Now,
it wasn't the black basketball reference. It was the black gangbanger reference.
Well, trash-talking basketball. Trash-talking basketball. You have to be a sports watcher, I guess, to get it, but a lot of America is. So you've got trash-talking and pickup basketball, all right, followed by he is often lazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow. You know, I mean, wow.
Mm-hmm.
This is ugly with a capital Ugh.
Ugly with a capital N.
Well, yeah.
Because you know what he was thinking of, and it began with that letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Trash talking.
But yeah, so tonight we've got on the one hand we've got Bob Johnson out there playing the guess who's coming to dinner card and reminding America that Barack Obama is a dope smoking fiend.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Wall Street Journal you've got Karl Rove picking up on more subtle framing metaphors, if you will.
Never mind the fact that the man inhabiting the Oval Office right now is one of the foremost blow monkeys of all time.
Oh, but yeah, you know, what did Robin Williams say about South American Indians? You take our land, we give you monkey for your back. you know, just yeah,
Robin
sure.
He did have the touch.
Yeah, he said that George Bush skied on his nostrils for what, decades?
As far as I know, he's still doing it.
Well, no, the way. Now, lately, what I'm seeing is downers, not Coke.
Oh, did you hear?
Coke makes you a real chatty Cathy kind of guy.
I wouldn't know.
Well, I'm here. Sometimes I'm here for educational purposes, Susan, and that's one of them.
Anyway, the comment I wanted to make is a message to Barack Obama. And Hillary Clinton. Barack, Hillary, go to your room and be quiet.
If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
If you cannot say anything nice, do not say anything at all.
Yeah. Stand in the corner. We'll tell you when you can come out.
Yes. And that's what they're being.
John, little Johnny Edwards, see if you can show these two how to be grown-ups now, okay?
Yes. I mean, it's just, I want to slap the balls up upside the head and say, you're playing right into Rove's hands, you twit.
Yep. Yep. And don't think they're not taking notes. I know exactly what you mean. Yep.
Oh, yeah. As for Darryl Bush, did you hear that comment he made about Iran in Dubai?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you looked in a mirror lately, Mr. Bush?
Oh, and by the way, there's a little more. There's a little more detail now out about the threatening message from the Iranian speedboats. Did you catch this one? Heard this one, Susan?
Not sure. Which one's that one?
Headline, heckler behind U.S.-Iran incident. It appears that sailors operating in the Persian Gulf since the 1980s have been aware of some guy or combination of guys who are somewhere within radio range, because, you know, if you go to Google Earth or the maps or whatever and you look at the Straits of Hormuz, it ain't exactly wide.
Yeah, you can practically jump across.
And they've had somebody, and there's been a heckler, that they've got the sailors have a racist epithet for that doesn't bear repeating. But he's been there, somebody has been doing this since the 1980s. And, for instance, this is all based on a story out of the Navy Times, saying that, you know, a renegade talker on the radio repeatedly harassed ships in the Gulf in the late 1980s. This is a quote. For 25 years, there's been this mythical guy out there who, hour after hour, shouts obscenities and threats. He could be tied up pierside somewhere, or he could be on the bridge of a merchant ship, the retired captain said. Navy women, here's another quote. Navy women, a helicopter pilot hailing a tanker, for example, who are overheard on the radio, are said to suffer particularly degrading treatment. Several Navy ship drivers interviewed by Navy Times raised the possibility that the heckler, or an imitator, was indeed featured in the Pentagon video.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I was on the phone to the White House this morning informing them that not that I expected my, not only did I not expect my views to be passed on to the Oval Office, but basically I was talking to the operators. I was telling them in regards to this very incident. Look up the Gulf of Tonkin incident in case you haven't heard it.
Oh, sure.
That's what started the Vietnam War. It was a fake. It never happened.
A spokesperson for the United States Navy Fifth Fleet in Bahrain said the Navy was still trying to determine the source of the transmission, but believed it was related to the Iranian actions. This was Commander Lydia Robertson, who said, the Iranian boats were coming close to the ships, making aggressive maneuvers, and objects were being dropped into the water. Okay, ma'am, that's fine, but what makes you think that the... Well, it was an incident, and it was in the Gulf of Hormuz, and Iran's evil, okay? I mean, they're not... It's getting pretty transparent at this point, Susan. Yeah.
Yeah. If they decide to start something, it's going to be... They're going to use a missile.
Or one of those... if the Iranians start something, it'll be one of those incredibly fast, like supersonic underwater torpedoes that can take out an aircraft carrier. But, you know, who the heck
they're
am I?
They're not going to fart around with some twit in a speedboat, which, by the way...
Wait. Twit in a speedboat? Some several years back, the Navy had a war game exercise that was quite secret at the time, but was since declassified or reported on or some such. In which exactly that scenario took place. A bunch of speedboats weaving in and around U.S. Navy capital ships. And in that war game, guess who won? The speedboats won, Susan. The speedboats won. And, in fact, it got so bad that the Navy stopped the war game, changed the rules, and said, well, this scenario could never happen anyway. We win.
I wonder if somebody didn't dig up that old war game.
Well, it was. Apparently, it's been known about in some circles for a while. I mean, I certainly didn't know about it until I read about it a couple of days ago. But yeah, there's a reason those speedboats are effective. Okay, it's not complicated either. If you go back to the Second World War, okay.
Oh yeah.
Our PT boats had devastating effects on the Japanese fleet.
Yeah, and they were made out of balsa wood. I don't deny the effectiveness of the small boats. What I do deny was the fact that these were Iranian Navy people in those boats. I really, really doubt that.
Well, I have not... Iranian craft have absolute right to operate in the Straits of Hormuz as they do in their own territorial waters. And frankly, the difference between the two in that neighborhood is pretty darn slim.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to verge over into somebody's territorial waters, based upon how you define it. And, you know, we won't even sign, Peter and I discussed this a couple of weeks ago during the horn section, we won't even deign to sign off on a treaty that establishes what territorial waters are.
Yeah, I know.
We just say that territorial waters are how we define them.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, the coast of Cuba is encompassed by our territorial waters, depending on which Republican's interpreting the definition.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I know. Yeah. They right off where I am, we claim 200.
Well, that's precisely my point. So what happens when you go 200 miles from Key West?
Yeah, gets interesting, don't it?
Yeah, you're well past Cuba at that point. Susan, have a wonderful evening.
You too. Love to Agnes.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm leaving the political corner of the swamp. Because why get hung up in the political corner of the swamp let's not say the political corner of the swamp, let's say the Barack and Hillary corner of the swamp. Because there's a story out there, and it comes out of mainly Denver. Social workers in Denver, who are, of course, in the public schools there, are beset by questions revolving around teen pregnancy. Because there's a lot of teen pregnancy. Now, why is there a lot of teen pregnancy? I don't know. You ask me. I think maybe the absence of birth control information might have something to do with it. Just say no to the Johnson girls. Tell them to put that thing away. You don't want any part of it. No, it's bad. You get the idea. So, no sex education, no birth control information, certainly no information about how to deal with a pregnancy. Ha-ah. So, social workers in the Denver public schools have begun to advocate, because of responses of some educators in those schools, have begun to advocate for maternity leave for pregnant teenage girls who want to stay in school, because, of course, there is a vested public interest in keeping teenage girls who happen to be pregnant in school, because education is one of the leading indicators of whether or not one will wind up, on the welfare rolls, evil, evil welfare, bad welfare, mommy, bad, or become what is called a productive member of society. Well, what's the some Denver schools responded? They've responded by telling young girls who have given birth that they will return to school on a normal schedule the day after the birth, or any further absences will be deemed unexcused. Now, Denver Public Schools Board President Teresa Pena says, "We're all in agreement. We want these young ladies back in school and catching up. We also need to be very mindful of the time they need for bonding with their babies and for healing." Board members sought the clarification regarding attendance by new mothers and pregnant students. And the suggestion is to give them 4 to 6 weeks after childbirth to recover. They're seeking clarification after hearing complaints that new moms were being told to report to class the day after they're released from the hospital or begin racking up unexcused absences that could hurt their grades. Now, for me, and maybe it's just because I'm some simple-minded liberal, valuing the relationship between a new mother and her child is kind of a no-brainer for me. Because, you know, that's the what's the phrase? What's the phrase the right wing likes to use? That's the response of a culture of life. Yes, a culture of life. Sweet Jesus. But the story I'm reading, let's see. What's some of the right wing comments? Keep it in your pants or your legs closed until you can take care of a kid, you fools. Another right winger. What next, Denver Public Schools? Nurseries with diaper changing stations in the back of classrooms? Daycare at the school? Did I miss something here? Aren't schools supposed to be institutes of learning? How about mandatory classes on birth control? Oh, really? A right winger? Birth control? Silent abortion. This is disgusting, says another person. Why are the Denver Public Schools catering to teen pregnancy? Really? Catering to? No, honey, we want you to come back to school the day after you've dropped the baby, and you know if you hemorrhage to death in your desk there, in geometry class, well, you know, please clean up the mess before you die. Like I said, this is an easy one to me. But apparently it's not so easy for the Concerned Women for America. Listen.
Maternity leave for high school. I'm Martha Kleeter, policy analyst with Concerned Women for America, in studio with Dr. Janice Krause, senior fellow and director of the Beverly LaHaye Institute. Welcome, Dr. Krause.
Time out. The who? The what? The Beverly LaHaye Institute. This woman is the wife of a well-known pro-life fundamentalist horror novelist. I'll take that as a daily double. Alex, who is Beverly LaHaye and who is Tim LaHaye of the Left Behind series? Right you are!
Thank you, Martha. This is a stunning article. I'm at a loss for words as to how to describe girls asking for maternity leave. It's really a new day, isn't it?
Really? You're at a loss for words to describe girls asking for maternity leave? Let me try a word on there for you, woman from the Beverly LaHaye fundamentalist radical BS organization right-wing front group. Here's a word. Reasonable! Sorry, we now return you to your regularly scheduled right-wing blatherfest.
When you have a regular school system that is being petitioned to provide maternity leave so that pregnant girls can stay in school and have a month off in order to have their baby and spend some time with their baby. Obviously, all of us think it's really important for a new mother.
Oh, obviously you do. That's why you've crafted this this several-minute piece of right-wing garbage to explain why the young women don't need maternity leave and don't need to bond with their babies. Because, after all, you right-wing freaks aren't pro-life, you're pro-fetus. And the kid's on its own once the birthing process is over. Right.
Time with her baby, that's, you know, tremendously important. But at a time when our country is facing absolute deluge of single mother families, this is something that I think is a very ill-advised policy.
Really? In when our country is faced with an absolute deluge, it's a damn flood. It's a flood of teenage oh, my God, you know, somebody build an ark. It's a deluge. When we have a lot of teen pregnancies, it's a bad idea to treat pregnant teenage girls like human beings so they won't just drop the hell out of school. See how insane these right-wing freaks are?
To encourage to have at a high school a program which promotes, in my opinion, promotes out-of-wedlock births and teen pregnancies.
Well, honey, you got a choice there at the Beverly LaHaye Institute. You can promote smart postnatal practices, or, honey, we can promote abortion. You pick. You pick. I mean, I'm all for telling the little girls and the little boys how to not make more little girls and little boys, but you hate that too. Jiminy. What are you going to do with these people?
Pregnancies. And also promotes single parenthood among these high school students. I mean, the reasons raised by proponents of this measure are good ones. Physical healing, bonding with the baby, but doesn't it ignore the essence of the fact that that girl's life has changed? She's no longer a high school student. She is now a mother. I mean, her education and her whole life is turned upside down.
No, that's the problem with teen pregnancy, ma'am. She's still a teenage girl. She's not 35 overnight and completely equipped to deal with a helpless little newborn. That's going to take some teaching of a different type. And, you know, in the still of the night, when the horrifying visions start of, you know, wanting to harm the baby, or being afraid that the baby will die in its sleep and they'll blame you, that calls for some intervention too, ma'am. But see, you're a godless, soulless, heartless Republican woman. And you just don't understand why she can't just get Lupe to come over and watch the baby while she goes to school. I mean, what the hell are the illegal immigrants here for except to pay them for $2 an hour to watch after our little white babies? Right? Her life is upside down. But the problem with these right-wing goons is that once the life is upside down, they want to go ahead and stomp on her a little bit. Because you know how it is with Republicans. They'd far prefer to shoot you in the back. Shoot him in the back, Gomez! Shoot him in the back! No solutions. No help, just complaints in the culture war.
This, I think, points to the problem with the liberal policies, because they really, in many instances...
Oh, yeah, it's the liberals. We got the little girls pregnant. Us liberals. Yep, liberals.
As in this one, they have a kind heart. And they mean well. Obviously, all of us would want a young mother to have every possible opportunity to do well by her child.
I call BS, because they wouldn't be producing this little hit piece if they wanted the young women to have the care that they needed. But see, we got to have tax cuts for Beverly LaHaye's multimillionaire husband so he can write more freak terror books. Jesus, will you just do the rapture? Just suck Beverly LaHaye right through the roof, would you? Take Tim and take this babbling woman from Concerned Women for a minute. Just go! So they'll stop trying to spit on young women, often, frankly, little girls, because, you know, 13, 14, I don't think you're a woman. I think you're still pretty much a kid, and that's the problem. Kids having kids. You know, that whole kids having kids thing went down considerably under the Clinton administration. So did the abortion rates across the board. And it's going back up now under the abstinence-only policies. Child violence is going up under the Bush administration policies. Postpartum death has gone up under Bush administration policies. It just doesn't sound very, good for the culture of life now, does it?
But when you base public policy on an individual situation such as this, you are headed for disaster, because you are saying to all of the other girls in that school and to the young men in that school that you can be totally irresponsible sexually. And
really does always boil down to sex for these people, doesn't it? We don't enjoy sex. They shouldn't either. Sex is not fun.
Sex is not good. Sex is not a loving act. When it's the hubby and me, I lay on my back and think beige. I'll paint the ceiling beige until he's done with his filthy business and rolls over and goes to sleep. Then I get my little bodice ripper out and my little vibrator friend, and then it's good.
They're gonna have sex. They'll be having sex in the halls if we give these little girls if we give them 4 weeks of postpartum care and time off from school. You won't be able to get to home ec for having to step over the rutting going on in the hallways. And there he was, a rutting on my Mayeller.
And the school will reward that behavior. They will provide every possible accommodation so that you will not suffer any consequences from what...
It's got to be some consequences. I tell you what. You know what? I wonder if we could outsource some American jobs doing some embroidery stitching on some little blouses. Maybe some school uniforms. You know, the right-wingers like... We right-wingers, we like school uniforms. We need school uniforms with a big scarlet A right over the left breast. And we can have them made in China, and they'll be really cheap, and we can sell them for a nice profit over here. Maybe at Walmart. I bet Walmart would help us sell school uniforms with a big scarlet letter A over the left breast, don't you think? I hate these people. I hate them.
You have done. This is very bad public policy.
Now, for a minute, let's talk about how pregnant girls are dealt with or how they've been dealt with historically. They've been taken out of the high school setting, but that doesn't...
And they've been put in the stocks, and raw vegetables have been thrown at them, and rotten fruit. And they've been dunked in the dunking tanks until they confessed that they were witches and they were bearing the children of Satan.
I mean, they don't get their education or they don't get the chance to bond with their children.
Well, one of the real realities of this situation is the school system that is being petitioned right now does have a school, a special school, for girls who are pregnant and have just had babies. The problem is that they have no openings because there are so many girls who are pregnant. And this is what we're facing as a...
Who broke the school system, sister? Was it the liberals? Did we just throw so much tax and spend money at the Denver public school system that they were overwhelmed with money and unable to provide adequate schooling because they just couldn't get anywhere for all the money in the way? Was it us liberals, sister?
No, I think that's a problem on your doorstep, madam.
Culture. And I think if you set up the kind of policies they're talking about, you're going to continue to have overflow enrollment in those schools that are special schools for girls who are pregnant and intent.
But Mike Huckabee says we need those babies. If those babies had been born 30 years ago, we wouldn't have any Mexicans swabbing our toilets and picking our lettuce.
You know, I really wish these women wouldn't take acid before they start their little recording session, but, you know, who the hell am I?
To keep their babies. This is a situation that the school is just asking for by setting up these kinds of soft-hearted programs that...
That's right, it's a soft-hearted program. What we need are some hard-hearted programs, cruel programs. Yank the babies away and put them in workhouses and raise them as serfs. And beat them regularly if they don't perform up to standard. And for God's sakes, don't teach them to read.
Don't deal with the reality of the situation the girls are in.
This is going to lead to other demands, isn't it? Like having on-site child care.
Most definitely, they've already asked for that. That's another point that is being
brought up. On-site child care? On-site child care? You mean with people who are certified to do infant care and to teach the new mothers how to do infant care? We can't have that now, can we? My God, the next thing you know, they'll be speaking French or something. I bet the little babies will come out of the cradle and the first thing they do will be to sing the Internationale and put a red bandana on, and then we'll all be commies.
caught up with this particular case. They're complaining that there are no child care facilities. Obviously, the taxpayer is going to be asked to provide all of these extra programs, and already, Martha, we are going bankrupt with the kinds of problems that are brought on by our culture, the kinds of expenses that are...
The trashy little girls' babies are causing us to go bankrupt. What will we do? What will we do? The world waits in slack-jawed anticipation.
Made on our tax revenues because of the breakdown of the family. We cannot do things. We cannot have...
Oh, the breakdown of the family. Next thing you know, there'll be gay couples trying to raise those babies, because that breaks the family down, too. Jesus, this is like some sort of coded message, isn't it?
Public policies that continue to promote the breakdown of the family. Instead, we have to reverse our policies and say, in the long term, we must have policies that encourage children to wait until they're married for sex, that encourage girls.
That's right. More abstinence-only education will make sure that they have more babies that we don't want to have programs for. Uh-oh.
To wait until they are married to have children so that we have...
Say no to the nasty sex organ. Just say no.
A society that values the family, that promotes marriage and promotes the family and strengthening the bonds of marriage and family.
Well, Dr. Krause, it definitely is...
Doctor? Doctor? Woman probably couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody.
Bringing home the point of the importance of family, and you would think this would be out of, say, New York City or California, but...
You know, where the liberals are. You know, those sickening liberals who want to do all that sickening business like take care of newborn babies and stuff. You'd think it would be New York or California. Ugh, disgusting liberals.
Shock of shocks. It's out of Denver, Colorado. So it's obviously this is a trend that's coming.
We thought Colorado was safe for Jesus.
To middle America.
Well, every school system in America is facing these kinds of questions. What do you do to accommodate the change in our culture? It is just overwhelming the school systems, it's overwhelming the social services, and it's overwhelming the tax structure in America.
Any advice you have?
I love it. It's overwhelming the tax structure. Oh, God, can't these right-wing freaks go 15 seconds without attaching a monetary value to human flesh and blood? Oh, well, I'll tell you what. That's enough of those freaks. We're going to take a little break. We're going to take a little break, and, gosh, I hope you enjoy the tune. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
Living on Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Hillary Clinton must take us for fools, because she keeps repeating, as she did on Meet the Press again, that when she voted for the Iraq War resolution back in the fall of 2002, she really wasn't voting for war at all. But who is she trying to kid here? Everyone understood what that vote meant. It gave Bush the unilateral power to declare that the UN route was going nowhere and that Saddam still constituted a grave threat and that, therefore, upon his own determination, even if he just had a bad night's sleep, that he was launching the bombs. You can't read that resolution any other way. But Clinton does. She said it was unfair to call it a vote for war, and then she blew smoke by saying she and Tim Russert could have this Jesuitical argument about what exactly was meant. That's the Clinton way. It's like splitting hairs about what the meaning of is is. After that, she blew more smoke, saying that Chuck Hagel had drafted the resolution, and he too had said that it wasn't a vote for war. Problem is, the resolution she did vote for wasn't Chuck Hagel's after all. It was a much more permissive one, and that's all the permission Bush needed. No matter how much smoke, Hillary Clinton now blows. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? Mother, do you think they'll like this song? Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls?
right then, about 16 minutes before the hour, 10 or so minutes of great conversation left in the program tonight. And for that express purpose, on the line from Brooklyn, we have our good friend Kevin. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I want to expound on the gentleman Gary in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
How I feel towards Mr. Johnson at BET, and I think, you know, I really hope he enjoys every penny that he's had, and he's very proud of what he's accomplished, because, you know, it's going to kind of wrap up the show tonight with the teen pregnancy and why I really don't care for him, because...
You mean Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they say behind every fortune is a crime, and nothing holds true more than Robert Johnson. He is responsible in many ways for these videos that he put out or uses his network to put out for the over-sexualization of our children. And I just filled in a class today where we went on a trip to the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, and we were learning about, like, the scientific process of experimentation, and we were creating groups of tomato plants. One is a control group, and one is another group, and one is, you know, a non-control group or whatever. And most of the girls who are, like, between 13 and 15 years old did not want to participate because it involved planting tomatoes. And they didn't want to get their fingernails messed up because they just came back from the nail salon.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's distressing. No, I mean, really, it is.
And
these are how old kids?
Between 13 and 15. And what has happened is that these kids... And, you know, here I am beginning to sound like an old fart at 36 now, have been between the Britney Spears and the hip hop videos and all that, have been over sexualized at a young age. In my day, I don't remember any of the young women saying, I didn't want to get my nails messed, I didn't want to do this because my nails would be messed up.
I like to think, Kevin, that if one of my daughters, and I have several, you know, handed that to me, and we'll be planting a garden, you see, later in the spring. Well, you know, I just like fresh stuff. I like tomatoes that you know, taste like tomatoes because I'm crazy that way. If one of my girls said that to me, you know, I'm not an ogre or anything, but I'd sort of give them the verbal both barrels on it. But, you know, what can you do? I mean, you're the substitute teacher, so... So did they get exempted?
No. Well, try not to. You say things, and basically what I said, and one of my colleagues was there, was like, you know, when I was their age, my parents did pay good money to send me on things like that. And here they are getting it for free.
Oh, man, careful. You are verging into fogey in a hurry, dude.
Yeah, I know. It's either they paid money for me to do it in the city or basically during the summer I was sent far away in order to do things like that.
To have that experience, that opportunity, sure.
Exactly. Either via camp or when I used to go.
But I mean, you're dealing with kids in the school system who, for whom nature is Central Park, right?
Or the botanical gardens, yeah.
Yeah, and for them, vegetables come in a can or a bag or a freezer bag, right?
Pretty much. But you know, again, it's like. It's just a whole over sexualization of these kids now. It's such a they're hit with.
Yeah, it's not. So what you're saying, Kevin? It's not a vanity thing about the nails. It's part of being hot.
Yes,
And it's and also the big status thing, one of the schools I teach in, they have a nursery. And the big status thing, I think, with the girls is bringing their newborns in. You know, I haven't really investigated
because,
that.
Well, look, you've probably hit something there that is a little bit disturbing and needs a lot of teaching moments. That, you know, a baby is not a puppy or a kitty or even a new bunny. It's a little human.
Yeah.
And it requires a whole lot of work. But, yeah, I mean, look, we've got a new baby here, a new grandbaby. And my two youngest daughters, you know, absolutely dote on her.
Yeah.
And I keep telling Agnes, you know, we got to reinforce that, you know, just because you love the baby doesn't mean you need one of your own.
Exactly. And it's sad to me because I do know these are kids raising kids. These are a product of kids being raised by kids who are raised by kids.
Yeah, what? A grandma of one of these 15-year-old mommies, what do you reckon? Grandma's 30?
30. Well, I ran into a classmate of mine who's a grandmother at 36.
Yeah, and in these circumstances, a 30-year-old grandmother is not unthinkable. That's a 15-year-old who had a baby.
Yeah.
And the 15-year-old and the baby is now 15 and having a baby.
Exactly. And, you know, I just look at it like the poorest sectors of our country, whether it be Appalachia or inner cities or, you know, the Hispanic indentured workers or whatever. And I don't want to classify it as indentured workers just being Hispanic. But that's just the reality where you do see 15-year-old grandmothers. I mean,
well, yeah, and follow the math up. That's a baby with a 15-year-old mama, a 30-year-old grandma.
Uh-huh.
Dig it, 45-year-old great grandmother,
okay,
and a 60-year-old great great grandmother.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the generational shift that we're looking at right now. And no, it is not racially confined. You're absolutely correct. I mean, there are the little middle school down the road here that my kids go to. There are pregnant girls.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Pregnant freshmen in the high school.
And another thing is, you know, even amongst the men, there's no generation gap because you do have men my age and boys that age basically wearing the same stuff.
Yeah.
So there is no generation gap. Now, you know, it's like the hottest thing now I notice, like, and I guess it made a comeback, is wearing Levi's jeans. That's the hot item now. I've been wearing Levi's jeans since I was a kid.
That's two of us.
And it's one of those things that it's been around for 150 years, but all of a sudden I'm like the hip teacher because I've been wearing Levi's jeans. I guess it came back. Full circle.
Man, that's easy hip. That's hip you don't have to work for.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, when I tell them these are around, these jeans are over 150 years old, they look at me like, huh?
You mean they're not? Oh, my God, that's hilarious, Kevin.
Yeah, and it's not,
if they start showing up wearing Weejuns, white socks, and the cuffs turned up and pegged, oh man, you know, Sherman's cranked up the way back machine, and you have gone back in time, dude.
And I have to tell him, look on the tag; it says since 1848.
Of course, the big difference is that Levi's jeans used to be made in America.
Exactly.
Now they're made with pride in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
And cost twice as much.
Yeah, but when you have a situation where there's no generation gap. And basically, like, in a lot of these situations, you have maybe even two or three generations, sometimes even competing for the same sexual partners. Something is way off.
Oh, now, see, that's going to give me nightmares now, Kevin. I could have done without that one.
It's a lot of times it's common where you will find a mother and daughter, a mother in her late teens, I mean, a daughter in her late teens and a mother in her mid-30s competing for men between the ages of 19 and in their 30s.
Calling Dr. Freud.
So it's like, you know, this whole hip-hop thing and this thing where you have, and it transcends class and race, too, where you have these baby boomers who don't want to get old gracefully and just fade off into the sunset.
Well, they're being bombarded with advertising that tells them that they're not supposed to.
Exactly.
I mean, Dennis Hopper's out there hawking a mutual fund or something.
Exactly.
Tell them that, you know, I'm not getting old gracefully. Find me a Harley.
Exactly. Is really screwing the whole family thing up. The whole...
Oh, I love the crankiness of some of our listeners, Kevin. In response to the young ladies not wanting to ruin their nails,
yeah.
Dig this. Hey, if they can afford to go to a nail salon, they can afford rubber gardening gloves. Damn it.
Yeah, but you know, it really is, you know, destroying a fabric of our society. And, you know, this is one sense where I may have to come off like being a conservative or whatever. And I'm not saying, you know, when you're 60 years old, be in a rocking chair, but accept being 60.
And accept the gift that lasting that long on this planet bestows upon you.
Yeah.
I mean, Agnes and I frequently have this conversation about what a jerk I have been in the past, and that'll come as a surprise to some people who think I still am, but I've been worse. And it's only a function of, you know, being in the cellar and you know, aging and mellowing a little bit like an old, you know, like some sort of wine or something. But to bring this full circle, you would feel comfortable saying, Kevin, that a lot of this falls at Bob Johnson's feet?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's like, hip-hop now has transcended generations, and again, a lot of it is just the over-sexualization of our youth and the older people now who don't want to accept getting older. Okay, don't forget, Flavor Flav is a man, and you ever seen that show on VH1?
Sadly, yes.
He's a 50-year-old man, and there's like 19-year-old women who... He has daughters older than those women who are trying to compete to get with him. Go figure.
I'd really rather not, if you know what I mean. But yeah, no, I get what you're... Yeah, yeah. And, well, like I said, there's that little video that's out there that was run on BET... that I just saw and found incredibly offensive, you know, and I'm a white guy.
Yeah.
Called Read a Book. I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody where it is or ask them to go find it, but, oh.
And not to say there weren't, you know, generation gaps in Hollywood or in the entertainment, you know, look at Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. He was like 20-some-odd years.
Sure.
15-year, but at least it was kept discreet.
A little bit of decorum, yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, Kevin, we got a roll, buddy.
Okay, bro.
All right, you take care. And let me know how the tomato plants turn out.
Yeah, okay.
I find that inspiring.
Okay.
Later. Bye. All right, thanks, everybody. Time to roll on out of here. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, helping to make the network and these programs possible each and every night. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse. Wait for it. 100 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Adjust this knob for a second. And today is Monday, January the 14th, 2008. If you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Monday evening in early January of 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk to myself and to the guest who will be appearing shortly after the introduction. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-head-on. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. That's 304-658-3333. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the emails during the break. And let's see. Show site, yes, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from the previous shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as I speak, and you'll find links also to Head On Radio Network's main site, where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I'm only a small part. Find links there to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Wow, what a weekend. I had a wonderful weekend. I trust that everyone else did, too. Just about had such a wonderful weekend. It restored my faith in God. I've got to... I've had a wonderful weekend, and I'll tell you all about that one day. Today is not the day, but one day I will tell you all about it. Want to tell you that... Oh, yes, Friday evening. Wow, wasn't that a... That was incredible. You know, we got to about, 10:30, something like that, and suddenly the service to the studio in West Virginia went poof, and that was all there was to it. There was no connectivity left. We finally restored it after, 10 or 15 minutes. It's what you'd call an unruly show Friday evening, an irregular show Friday evening, but we seem to be stable this evening. My end seems stable, and the studio seems stable, and that's all good news. So we're looking for a smooth sail tonight. Our guest this evening